This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Everybody, the weekend is here, the last weekend before Thanksgiving. It is Friday, TGIF, thank God it's Friday, thank God it's Frank, and we are loaded for bear this morning. There's a ton of news that we're going to cover. There's a bunch of interesting stories that we're going to comment on, and an hour from now, if you look up at the sky, and again, please don't do this if you're driving. If you look up at the sky an hour from now, you are going to see a full-fledged, genuine lunar eclipse. We're going to have a gentleman who is going to give us play-by-play on that lunar eclipse, tell you what you're looking at, what it means, and the rest. Dr. Sky will be here in the 2 o'clock hour. We got denunciations coming for you and a bunch of other subjects. But first, it is time for
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Well, the name is sort of self-explanatory. Whatever you have questions about, now is the time to ask them. 1-800-848-WABC, 1-800-848-9222. You can ask questions about film. You can ask questions about television, books, business, radio, cocktails, the business of radio, cocktails about, you know, cocktails with radio people. You want my advice on a subject, now's the time. You want to know about my personal history. You want to know who my fourth grade teacher was. I'll spare you the call. It was Mr. Zinn. You want to know about pro wrestling, gambling, Atlantic City, local politics, restaurants, New York, the criminal justice system, aliens, the mob, any hypothetical questions, my personal preferences on anything, relationships, baseball, the culture at large. Any subject is fair game. Whatever you have questions about, I will do my best to answer them honestly. 800-848-WABC, 800-848-9222. Now, I've spent a lot of time thinking about a question that was asked last week, and I'm going to do my best to answer it now, and the answer is a little anticlimactic. Fella called last week, and he asked, what is the one question that you wish you would have been asked, but you never have? I'll be honest with you, I have thought about this every single day over the course of the last week, and I can't think of a single question that I wish I was asked, but I haven't been. So I hate to do that to that caller, but I want to stop somebody from asking the same question. I can't think. So the questions I'm most interested in are the questions that will produce good radio shows. So if you have a question, whatever the subject, that will produce a good discussion that people will be interested in, engaged in, now's the time. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-WABC. Let me begin with Pete in Piscataway. Hello, Pete.
Hi, Frank. In U.S. history, in your opinion, what are the three or four worst U.S. presidents? And why?
That is such a good question. I'm going to have to say, you know, look, James Buchanan really did nothing to stop the Union from falling apart in the run-up to the Civil War. So he's got to be right up there for me. Warren G. Harding was incredibly corrupt. Now, it all depends on how you view what makes a president good, what makes a president bad. Warren G. Harding was personally corrupt, and he spent most of his time getting drunk and cheating on his wife. Now, I'm not a Mormon. I don't have an issue if people need to step out on their wives. It's not something I would do. But it's something that look, Warren G. Harding was incredibly corrupt. You had the Teapot Dome scandal. You had a lot of corruption going on within his administration. But at the same time, you also had a balanced budget, which is something that is a long time away from anything we imagine. Franklin Pierce, he's also a horrible president. He did nothing to stem the divisions that were happening in the country in the run-up to the Civil War. And there's not exactly, because he was president for such a short amount of time, you can't really judge his accomplishments or his lack of accomplishment. But William Henry Harrison certainly didn't do very much as president. So James Buchanan, Warren G. Harding, Franklin Pierce, William Henry Harrison, they're all right up there if you're asking me to list the worst presidents we've ever had. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Tom in the Bronx. Hello, Tom.
Yeah, this is Fugazi Tom here.
Gotcha. Thanks, Tom. Hey.
Okay. Yesterday, was it you and Dominic that was talking before he left and you came on talking about Bernard Goetz and Widenhauser?
Right. I think we were both talking about him, yes.
Okay, and your comparison was that they was almost the same thing, same scenario?
I think that's what Dominic said. I think that's what Dominic said, yes.
Okay, because if he said a comparison, I think it was completely opposite, because Bernard Goetz...
So what's your question, Tom? What's your question?
This is what I'm going to ask right now, because Bernard Goetz didn't have his gun out, and he was laying in wait. And Widenhauser had his gun out, and he was looking for, he went after the problem. So if there was a comparison that they was about the same thing, I don't think so. I don't think
so. All right, well, so I'm not sure that's a question, but I think there were some similarities and some differences. 800-848-WABC, that's 1-800-848-9222. Andrew is in Virginia on Route 95. Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Frank. Yeah, I won't be looking up to watch the solar eclipse because I'm driving all the way down to South Carolina tonight, but enjoying the show very much.
Wonderful.
I have a quick question for you. I want to know what you think about unidentified aerial phenomenon, as the Pentagon is now referring to it, and if you're familiar with Luis Elizondo and that whole issue.
Well, I'm very familiar. I've been trying to get Luis Elizondo on the show. When he did 60 Minutes, I played the audio of his his commentary on this show. I think, look, clearly, and thanks for the call, Andrew, clearly there's something out there in the night sky or in other places, oceans, other places, that we can't explain. The question is not do UAPs or UFOs exist? The question is, what are they? That's the question. And that's what, when we do these segments on UAPs or UFOs or aliens or whatever, the question so often delves into, oh, I don't believe in that. Well, there's nothing to believe in. These exist. Even the Director of National Intelligence, in their report, they've identified something along the lines of 188 different instances of UAPs spotted by the military. They can't explain. So the question is not, do these things exist? Yes, they do exist. By the government's own admission. The question is, what are they? Are they American military aircraft? Are they a foreign government, China or Russia? Or are they something otherworldly? I think if you look at the likelihood of what we've seen from China, Russia, and our own government, the most likely scenario is this is something that's otherworldly. But we don't know. We don't know. That's why that should be a question. And I'm so pleased Andrew asked it. That should be a question that everybody is asking every single day. But for 70 years or so, we get so into the habit of, oh, anybody that sees a flying saucer or a UFO is a lunatic, is drunk, is a hillbilly, is some lunatic. It's not the case. The military is seeing these. We've seen them on radar. These objects are moving in the sky in a manner that even seasoned Navy pilots can't explain. So the question is not, are they out there? We know they are. The question is, what are they? Is it a foreign government? Is it our own government? Is it something otherworldly? I don't know. That's one of the things that we are dedicated to exploring on this radio show. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Joe in Brooklyn. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Frank. How are we doing tonight? Good.
Good.
All right, quick question. When you were in the fifth grade or sixth grade or seventh grade, when did you decide to go on the radio? And was Curtis like a guy you looked up to? I know you don't look up to Frankie Russo, but for Curtis you do. So, like, what made you go on the radio?
It's a good question. I always was a big radio listener, and I've told the story many times, including the other day. The first time that I ever thought about radio as a career was I was listening to Rush Limbaugh. I had heard all about this guy, Rush Limbaugh. It's going back about 30 years. And, you know, I said, all right, let me tune into him. And I'm listening. And he's talking about the news, talking about the White House, talking about the president, this, that, this, and that. And he says something along the lines of, and let's look at the G7 summit in Humpback, Nova Scotia. My mind was blown. My mind was blown. I never in my wildest dreams imagined that you could intentionally mispronounce the name of a community for comedic effect. That was the first time that I ever thought, oh, well, maybe I could do this for a living. Because I said, well, I want to do that. I want to mispronounce the names of places. The fact that, you know, I was very interested in politics as a youth. And I had a liberal uncle and a conservative uncle. And both of them would tell me all about the different radio shows that they would listen to. And I would listen to all of the hosts that they would listen to. And I became a fan of the medium. In terms of when I viewed this as a career, I want to say probably in high school. I was doing a public access TV show. I had envisioned myself being a filmmaker, a film producer, film director, and I was taking the training over at Staten Island Community Television. And a friend of mine, Brian is his name, we're still friends, he also had aspirations of doing video production, and he didn't want to do anything on screen. And I said, all right, okay, we both want to take the training, we both want to put on shows, I'll be the host of this show. He was the producer, I was the host, and lo and behold, I ended up emulating a lot of the radio people that I was a fan of. And so a lot of folks ended up saying, oh, well, maybe this is something you should pursue as a career. I was always a big fan of Curtis, and I would say I do view Curtis as something of a mentor. So, yeah, I think that's fair to say. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Anthony in Suffern. Hello, Anthony.
Hey, good morning, Frank. How you doing? So, our question is, my friends and I, most of us are in our mid-60s to late-60s, and we want to know, are they ever going to have freestanding gambling parlors like OTBs? Because we don't use iPhones, we don't have computers, and we want to gamble too.
In New York, you mean?
Yeah, we don't want to drive, to Atlantic City to gamble. We don't want to use, we want to be able to go. Like OTB, my friend talked to a person at OTB, they said they were all prepared. They could have been up and running within 30 days. Of legalizing gambling, but they didn't give any chance to bid in the contract.
I do think it's only a matter of time, Anthony, primarily because the state wants money. And we are seeing the state go forward with all sorts of things in the gambling realm. We're seeing them push forward with sports gambling, which is relatively new in New York. We're seeing them push forward now with online gambling and online sports betting. I think freestanding betting parlors, that is something that is a reality within the next 3 years, I believe. 800-848-9222, answering your questions on any subject. George Benson, Give Me the Night. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. We are in the midst of a full-fledged...
The Other Side of Midnight proudly presents Ask Frank.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Ask Frank Anything.
Any question, any subject, 800-848-WABC. You can also try and email me, frank.morano@wabcradio.com. That's frank.morano. That's M-O-R-A-N-O at wabcradio.com. Questions about any subject, I'll do my best to answer them. Rob is in Scarsdale. Hello, Rob.
I knew you'd take my call next. Is you're basically a marketing guy. You know how to make a profitable station, put it on the air. I did the same thing in news for 35 years.
Oh, very nice.
Anyway, got a question for you. Mm-hmm. What part did you play in what was your target demographic when John said he was going to buy the station? What? How do you put it together? How do you know the programming would work as well? I mean, you have Destination Radio. You brought it back to New York. Hasn't been there in years. The only thing was maybe Rush. People would actually set aside 3 hours a day. But what you guys are doing is ruining people's habits. You really are. People aren't sleeping.
So, Rob, I'm just trying to be clearer on the question. The question is what exactly?
What part did you play in it, and who were the main guys, and what did John want you to put together that you've achieved?
So, honestly, I played almost no part other than this show and other than telling John that I thought I could do a good job at night. I played almost no part in this show. John has been very vocal, privately and publicly, that he'd like to do more music radio, which we've done on the weekends. And he's been very clear that he wants this radio station to be number one again. This show is number one, AM or FM. And I think, you know, he wants to get to the point where all the other shows are number one as well. So, but I've played no part. Honestly, I would tell you if I had. Sometimes I wish I played more of a part in what was going on in the station. Sometimes I make suggestions that are unsolicited. Sometimes they get taken. Sometimes not. But I played legitimately almost no part in everything that's happened over the last year, except for this show. And I'm very pleased to tell you that based on the September ratings, we haven't gotten the October ratings yet, but based on the September ratings, this is the number one show in New York in its time slot. Number one AM, number one FM. We are doing a 10.2 share. That means of all of 100 radios, about 10 are tuned to this radio station. I don't know the last time this radio station did a 10.2 share at any time. It means if you're stuck in traffic right now and you see somebody next to you listening to the radio, there's a 1 out of 10 chance they're listening to the same show you are. 800-848-WABC, answering your question on any subject. 800-848-WABC. Leo is on the Upper East Side. Hello, Leo.
Hi, Frank. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
Frank, if I can, before the question, have just short suggestion. I'm a father of four daughters, and only the youngest one, I was next to my wife holding her hand and whispering in her ear when the youngest one was born, and it made real difference. If you have any chance, drop the show and be with your wife when she gives the birth. That's just my suggestion. I know that it made, in my case, real different. Somehow be there with her.
Well, I aim to, Leo. I aim to. In fact, just yesterday or maybe the day before, I recorded a liner of what we're going to play if I get called to the hospital while we're on the air. So, yeah, I aim to be there as soon as I get the word that my wife is giving birth. I will leave the station and head to the hospital. 800-848-9222. Tom is in the Bronx. Hello, Tom.
Yes. Hi, Frank. I'd like to say, had you ever heard or have seen the TV series of The Real McCoys? Do you ever remember The Real McCoys?
I've never seen it. Never seen it.
They were prior to the Beverly Hillbillies, in fact. But that was with Walter Brennan, who used to play a cowboy all the time.
Yeah, I've never seen it, Tom. I appreciate the question. Sounds like a great show. Never seen it. 800-848-9222. Bill is in Huntington. Hello, Bill.
How you doing?
Good.
Could I ask you something first? Can you take cat questions?
I'll do my best to answer your question on any subject, Bill.
Should I save it for Curtis?
Probably you should. I'm far from a cat expert.
All right. Now let's talk about Star Trek, okay?
See, that's a question I can't answer.
Okay, the original series, right? Now, we all know that George Takei, he came out in a big way in the 90s as a gay activist, right? But I want to talk about Lieutenant Sulu, okay? Now, as I remember, there was an episode where they rematerialized in a transporter, and it was in another universe where Spock had a beard.
Right, mirror,
right,
the episode.
Right. Okay. Now, they were on the bridge, and the other universe, Lieutenant Sulu, Aurora wanted to distract him, so she come on to him, and
sure,
he start to respond. And then when she's through distracting him, she take a dagger and she scratch his face.
Yep, I remember.
Okay, but he was clearly heterosexual in that scene, right? Was there ever a scene in the real world where he was heterosexual?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not really an expert on George Takei's sexuality.
No. What I mean, I'm talking about Lieutenant Sulu. My question is, was he heterosexual in the alternate universe and homosexual on the regular Enterprise?
So I don't believe there was a scene depicting him fraternizing with women. But that could be. I don't know. I know in the reimagining, the Christopher Pine version of the series, the films, you know, Star Trek with Christopher Pine and Zachary Quinto, the Sulu character in that film series is gay. I have not seen anything on the original series that indicates his heterosexuality. Well, you know what? The only thing I'll mention is, if you watch the movie Star Trek Generations, Sulu has a daughter. And, Kirk asks Scotty, when did Sulu have the time to start a family? And so he doesn't really get into the details, but Scotty basically said, well, you've always said if something's important, you make the time. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Vinny in Caldwell, New Jersey. Hello, Vinny.
Yeah, how do you feel about this journalist chasing the juror bus? Do you feel they should really take his job for this? Because he really didn't get no information from the jurors.
No, I don't think they should take the fellow's job for it. No.
Mm-hmm. So what is the codes and regulations of what he did?
Well, I don't think there are any.
Oh, there is none?
No, not that I'm aware of, no.
I was just curious about that.
Yeah, no, not that I'm aware of. I've covered a lot of trials, and you try to get as much information as you can about the jurors on the case. So no, I don't think there's any prohibitions, certainly no FCC prohibition or anything like that. So no, I don't think there's any prohibitions. Up to the judge, if he decides that their news coverage was so oppressive that it affects the deliberations, I don't think so. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to BJ in Queens. Hello, BJ.
Hey, Frank. Good to hear you. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks.
Listen, this Vice President Kamala Harris seems to be spiraling out of control. Her communications director has just resigned. She's not making sense when she's speaking publicly. She's becoming more and more like Boris Yeltsin. What's your take on her political fortunes?
Well, I've never really been too impressed with Kamala Harris, I'll be honest. I thought it was a poor pick on Biden's part.
Yeah.
My thinking is the best thing she has going for her is the fact that Biden is so unpopular. I don't see any scenario in which Joe Biden is the Democratic nominee in 2024. So they're going to look whether there's an open primary or whether the party insiders try to rig it for someone. There's going to be someone that's the nominee of the Democratic Party in 2024. At this point, in spite of their failings in their jobs, I think the two most likely picks for that are Kamala Harris or Pete Buttigieg. So I think the fact that Harris is a woman of color, and the fact that she's been elected, that propels her to the front of any presidential contest. So I don't think she's done much as vice president. Remember, Joe Biden said he put her in charge of the border, and we see what a mess the border still is. And she doesn't seem to be, I don't know, doing much to right the ship in terms of the Biden administration. But she's got name recognition. She's got a national profile. She's got the right gender. She's got the right ethnic profile. And I think she's going to be a very competitive candidate if there is an open candidate, open primary in 2024, which I have to be honest, Joe Biden's turning 79 next week. I do think there will be. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Yankel is in Tom's River. Hello, Yankel.
Hi, Frank. I have two questions. I started working out like, you know, 2-3 months ago. So I do research what I should do, and I see that most people say that you should do every other day in when you work out a muscle. So I want to know why is it, I know that if it's rest, but if I work out every day, I won't become stronger quicker.
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. Can you repeat it?
I started working out recently, and I was doing research. How should I do workouts? And most people that I ask, they say that you should work out each month. You should only work out muscle every other day. So I want to know if I do it every day, will it not be quicker to get stronger?
Well, I would suggest that you not work out the same muscle groups in consecutive days. I think you should do one on, one off. So if you do arms on Monday, I'd suggest you do legs on Tuesday. If you do chest on...
I want to go quicker if I do arms straight, 2 days in a row.
What, you're talking about arms and arms?
Yeah, let's say do arms. Let's say just go straight every day arms. It won't be quicker?
Well, yeah, but I mean, then... I think you're risking soreness and you're not necessarily getting the most out of your arm workout. I would suggest you do arms, then legs, then chest, and then kind of repeat.
And you mentioned last week that your wife is from Jewish descent. So I want to know, considering this, what do you think of circumcising the baby if it's a boy?
Well, at this point, you know, and this is something we've talked about, we're leaning towards circumcision. That's the way we're going.
The reason I'm asking is that I'm a practicing Jew. I was curious.
Well, they say practice makes perfect.
Yeah. Okay, have a good night.
Thank you. 800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to David in St. Louis, Missouri. Hello, David.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
Good, thank you.
So I got a question. So I know you do the show like throughout the week and every night you do it till 6 a.m., right?
Correct.
How much coffee do you drink to get to this? Or how much energy or protein bars do you do this to keep yourself awake?
Well, so in terms of coffee, I will do at most one or two cups a night. On a rare night, you know, I didn't get a lot of sleep today. So on a rare day like today, I might do three. I haven't had any so far. But the most I would have is three. Usually it's just one or two, though.
All right. And do you, like, have any, like, protein or, like, anything?
It's pretty rare. No, I don't. I drink a lot of this Life Change tea, which I'm a big supporter of and a big believer in, and it gives you a ton of energy without caffeine. You know, the thing with getting energy from caffeine, and I do drink caffeine, and I do consume caffeine, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you I don't. But the thing with caffeine is it really doesn't make you any more alert. It doesn't make you any more energetic. What it does is it fools your brain into thinking you're not tired. Now, you still are tired, but it fools your brain into thinking you're not. So I don't like to rely too much on caffeine. Caffeine can work wonders. You know when I really tend to rely on caffeine? When I'm driving home from work and don't want to fall asleep driving home. Because it will keep you alert for 20, 30, 40 minutes that you need to stay awake to get home. But I don't like to overdo it with the caffeine. Everything that I've heard from people indicates that you shouldn't rely on caffeine as a source of energy. And it also does disrupt your sleep. On the days that I have had an extra cup of coffee or so, I do tend to find that I have a tough time sleeping that day. And I see this with people in every sector of life. You know, they have these giant cups of coffee from Starbucks, 10, 12, 14 ounces, and then they're amazed that they can't fall asleep. Well, is it any wonder you're drinking that much coffee? So I will do at most one or two cups of coffee. 800-848-WABC. We have two lines open, 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Larry in Brooklyn. Hello, Larry.
Oh, hi, Frank. So I'd like to ask you, and all the residents of New Jersey, I'd like to ask this question. How is it that Frank Cinerella, if I have my facts correct, okay, that Frank Cinerella was ahead by 52% to 50% when the polls closed in Bergen County with 48,000 write-in ballots to count? And when they were all counted, all of a sudden Murphy was ahead by 14,000 votes. Now, I know that they say write-in votes are skewed Democratic, but are they all Democratic?
Well, so first of all, there's no Frank Cinerella. I think the person you're talking about is Jack Cinerelli. Second, I think you're not talking about write-in votes. I think you're talking about mail-in votes. And yes, for whatever reason, Republicans have become very distrustful of mail-in voting. So what we've seen across the country in the last 2 years especially is that the votes that take place at the polls overwhelmingly favor Republicans, and the votes that are sent in by mail overwhelmingly favor Democrats. For whatever reason, Republicans do not trust mail-in voting, and they have a strong preference towards voting in person. Democrats seem to feel much more comfortable with mail-in voting, so the mail-in voting does favor them overwhelmingly. The fact that Jack Cinerelli was as close as he was, though, shows you how inaccurate the polling was in New Jersey. There was not a pollster that showed this race being as tight as it was. That's one of the reasons I think polling is sort of nonsense at this point, because we've seen time and time again the pollsters, irrespective of the winner, get the race wrong. 800-848-WABC. Bruce is in St. Pedro, Belize. Hello, Bruce.
Hey, Frank. How you doing?
Hanging in there. Thank you.
Listen, you're a big Met fan, right?
I am. Long-suffering.
What is wrong with that team, man? Do you think what happened in the last year between the manager and Beltran and then the guy getting drunk on the Triborough Bridge at 4 o'clock in the morning, sleeping in his car? Oh, my God. What's wrong with them?
So the question is, what's wrong with them? That's a question I can't answer. I have no idea. You see different managers. You see different general managers. You see different owners. And we're still dealing with the same curse. I cannot figure it out. Cannot figure it out for the life of me. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Pete in Staten Island. Hello, Pete.
Hey, Frank. I got a question for you. Did you ever get stuck on the Staten Island Ferry or the Staten Island Rapid Transit?
I've never been stuck on either of those. I have been stuck on the subway, usually when a mentally disturbed person does not want to move out of the path of the closing doors. But I've I'm not joking. That's been sometimes I've been stuck for 15, 20, 30 minutes where there's someone who's mentally ill, who won't move out of the way, and nobody wants to push this guy out of the way. And until the police come and arrest this person, the subway just stands there.
Right. I got stuck on the Staten Island Ferry when Sandy hit because the water table was so high that they couldn't dock the boat. They had to dock the boat by a pier in Bayonne, and I had to get home from there. It was an experience. That's why I asked you.
Well, thank you, Pete. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Jeff in Brooklyn. Hello, Jeff.
How you doing there? I would like to ask you, name the Jewish members of the Mafia.
Well, you know, if you're talking about La Cosa Nostra, you cannot be a member of La Cosa Nostra if you are not Italian. Now, there are a lot of Jewish gangsters that have had dealings with
No, that's not what I'm talking about. The Gotti family is Jewish?
That's not true.
It's 100% true.
That's not true. I know the Gotti family, and that's not true.
Victoria, the mother Victoria, was Jewish.
So what's her maiden name? What's her maiden name?
You know, I don't know. I have to look it up.
So so I know Victoria. She listens to the show every day. She's listening right now. Her maiden name is DiGiorgio. She's not Jewish. She is Italian. And the reason that it was first reported that she's Jewish is because her husband's nickname for her at times when it wasn't Butch was Jew. So because her husband would call her the Jew, people came to the impression that she was Jewish. She is not Jewish.
I knew people in Howard Beach who went to school with a John Gotti Jr. and his sister, and this is what he told me. He told me John Gotti was Jr. was proud to be Jewish. So,
I tell you, I know John Gotti Jr. who's at my wedding. I know Victoria. Right. She's listening to the show right now. Neither of them are Jewish. Victoria's maiden name is DiGiorgio. She's not Jewish. I mean, and again, Victoria is not anti-Semitic. She wouldn't have anything. She wouldn't be ashamed if she was Jewish. In fact, I've been with her when she's cautioned young women about who to date and who not to date. And I've heard her tell many women that, oh, Jewish men make such great husbands. But she's not Jewish, according to her. Now, who am I going to believe? Am I going to believe the woman that you claim is Jewish and she claims is not? Or am I going to believe you, Jeff? No, I'm going to believe her. Now, if she decides that she does an ancestry DNA test and she goes back 500 years and she finds the DiGiorgios were somehow somehow as Jewish as Christopher Columbus, am I going to believe her at that point? Sure. But Victoria has told me repeatedly, because I've been in her company when people have asked her about this, she's told me repeatedly she's not Jewish. So she said she's not Jewish. John Gotti Jr. said he's not Jewish. They're not Jewish. That is a popular misconception. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Joe is in Howard Beach. Hello, Joe.
Frank, years ago, I had a friend of mine. His name was Kevin Mahan. He was from Cleveland. He came to New York, and he was a middleweight boxer. And he was also an actor. Now, he did a pilot on CBS, 3 hours, about Curtis Sliwa. And he was waiting you know, for them to pick the show up, this and that. And supposedly they showed the show to Curtis Sliwa, and he didn't like it. And they just, you know, he got paid for the treat for the movie, and that was it. And he used to kid with everybody, say, Curtis Sliwa helped everybody in New York but me. You know anything about this?
So there was a film in 1981 called We're Fighting Back. And Kevin Mann played Morgan Case Casey. And that was actually, I believe, you know, John Avildsen was involved in that, who did Karate Kid and some other things. Curtis never said he would not want that to be a TV series. In fact, when I was working with Curtis about 15 years ago, he was really trying to get the rights back to that film so that he could sell the rights to the Guardian Angels and to his life story to someone else. But no, that is not true. It's not true that they asked him to do a pilot and he didn't want to do it. Curtis would have been happy if there was a TV series based on the Guardian Angels. But yeah, that's We're Fighting Back. I've never seen it. It's not a very good movie from what I'm told. You know who is in that? Ellen Barkin, actually, is in that, believe it or not. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. If you have a question on any subject, let me say hello to Norman in Brooklyn. Hello, Norman.
Yeah, hi, Frank. Do you believe in Bigfoot?
Who Absolutely.
Is Jewish, by the way.
Yes. Yeah. Not only is Bigfoot Jewish, but he's also circumcised. The evidence that I've seen that there is a creature called Sasquatch or Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it, that there is some sort of creature that fits that description out there in places like Oklahoma, California, maybe even New York, I think that it is more likely than not. So can I say with certitude that there's a creature called Bigfoot? No. But I think it's more likely than not. All right. Two open lines if you want to jump on board with a question. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC.
We are New York on New York's Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Electric Light Orchestra, Don't Bring Me Down. Don't bring me down with your questions. 800-848-WABC, answering your questions on any subject, at least doing my best to answer your questions. Can't guarantee that I'll answer them. I can promise you I'll try. Let me say hello to Joe in Brooklyn. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Frank.
Hi.
I'm curious about Curtis. Do you think he's an anti-Semite?
No.
So what do you say about the comments he made, some nasty comments about Jews?
Well, which specific comments?
He said the Jews are coming in our area, in our community, they're not paying taxes, they're about the shuls, about the yeshivas.
Yeah, I don't think he was talking about Jews in general. I think he was talking about the Hasidic Jewish bloc in certain communities.
So do you think he dislikes the Hasidic Jews?
No. No, but I also think that he thinks that the Hasidic Jewish community should have to adhere to the same laws, whether it's zoning, whether it's schooling, that every other community adheres to. Curtis has two sons that are Jewish. He is a big champion of Israel, been to Israel many times. And look, I'm not Curtis's lawyer. I'm not here to represent him. But I think the preponderance of Curtis's criticisms about the Hasidic Jewish bloc as a political entity in places like Rockland County, I think he's more right than he is wrong. But I'm not here to speak for Curtis. You want to talk to Curtis about what his views are? He's going to be here Sunday, 3 to 5 and 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Joe in Manhattan. Hello, Joe.
Hi. Hi there. You used the word circumcision a couple of times, and then there was this Jewish gentleman who called, mm-hmm. right, regarding in case you have a son. Now, have you done thorough research? Because remember one thing, if you do have a son, I believe you're going to have a, you know, female child in view of the fact that you might have heard that the term she was used, you know, by a nurse. And hence, you consider that you might have a daughter instead of a son. But nevertheless, because what cannot be undone, you know, can wait or should wait, which means that once you circumcise the son, right, if you do have a son, that's it. But on the other hand, he's got a whole lifetime to decide on his own.
Well, you're right,
Joe. Have
you
heard of Dina Dale?
Yeah.
Have you heard of Dina Dale?
Dina Dale, the doctor. Well, the supposed doctor. Yes, I have. You know what it is, though? You know, I don't want to. I don't know if I should say this, but I will because I tell you everything. Bernie McGurk, who works here, he was not circumcised until he was 7 or 8, maybe even 9 years old. He describes that situation as being the most painful thing that he can imagine. He still describes trying to walk home and be from school and being almost unable to do so because his parents didn't get him circumcised until he was, I think, 8 or 9. You know what my memory of circumcision is? Non-existent, because it happened when I was a baby. So my hope is that we get the baby circumcised and he won't remember it, rather than let him make his own decision when he's 8, 9, 10, 12, 33 and he's in excruciating pain. So I feel like I've said enough about this. I feel like this is a discussion, if there's further discussion to be had, that's better had between my wife and me rather than a bunch of, you know, callers and me. No disrespect to you. 800-848-WABC, answering your questions on any subject. One open line if you want to jump on board. 800-848-9222. Xavier is in New Jersey. Hello, Xavier.
Good evening, Frank. Good show as usual.
Thank you.
Got a question. I know you're a gambler. Did you ever see the great movie The Gambler with James Caan and Paul Sorvino?
So believe it or not, I've never seen the original version. I saw the remake with Mark Wahlberg.
You got to see the original.
I will. It's on my list, and I will see it.
Just a great movie. One more thing before you leave me, Frank. I stumped you back in May for a hat. Never got it.
You're kidding. I want you to give Philip your information, and I will bring that up with our promotions department again. Get Xavier's information, and we will bring this up with promotions. We've had some turnover in the promotions department, so if we can get him a cap, we will. Gary's on Staten Island. Hello, Gary.
Who's the biggest rhino on Staten Island?
Well, you know, I don't know that I'm in the best position to judge that since I'm not a Republican. So I couldn't tell you. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. If you want to jump on board, now is the time. Jeff is in the Boogie Down Bronx. Hello, Jeff.
How you doing, Frank?
Good.
This is 1689 Jeff, remember?
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, what are you going to do with the eclipse tonight, man? I mean, the weather's not isn't right for us. So you got a backup plan?
I am totally leaving that to Dr. Sky, who's going to join us in just 5 minutes, and he's going to guide us through the eclipse. 800-848-WABC. Hey, a few people, including my wife, asked me about the title of yesterday's podcast because apparently there's some misplaced apostrophes. I'm pretty sure that is due to the commentary by Jeremy, who we had on in the first hour, where he was mocking millennials for using apostrophes improperly. So I think he's sort of trying to be ironic there. Matt, who was in for Molly, is off today, so he can't speak for himself, but I think that he was being ironic there. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Fred in New Jersey. Hello, Fred.
Frank, two things quick. I like the tea. I ordered more today.
Wonderful.
My question is gold. If gold is so good, why is it the guy selling me the gold rather have my cash?
Well, it's a good question for him. Next time he's on the show, you can call in and ask him, Fred. I can't answer that. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to you, Nick, in Farmingdale. Hello, Nick.
Hi, Frank. I've been doing some research, just kind of, you know, looking around the internet. I was curious about radio ratings and the science behind them. So I went online, and apparently I saw that the Nielsen ratings don't tabulate from 12 to 6 a.m. every day. So I was curious. I mean, this is just
they don't tabulate from midnight to 6 a.m.?
That's what it said online, at least, on their website.
That is not true. Anyway, I was curious. That is not true.
Oh, really? I was going to ask what source you got it from, but if that's not true, then...
No, that is not true at all. No. Nielsen, they use the same PPM devices to tabulate ratings at 1 a.m. as they do in 1 in the afternoon. Now, why would they stop tabulating ratings at midnight?
Yeah, that was what I found confusing. I don't know. Maybe it's... I don't know. Maybe I read it wrong. I'm not sure.
No, that is absolutely not true. There's no truth to that at all. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to – well, actually, we're just about out of time. Hey, those of you that are on hold, I will – you got to go because I don't know that we're going to have much of an opportunity to talk about any of this stuff. The lunar eclipse is here. If you are ready for the lunar eclipse, then do yourself a favor. Turn up the volume on your radio or your wireless device, because you are going to get an education from Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky. We're going to be able to watch the lunar eclipse. If you can't watch it, we'll tell you what it would be like. And we're going to get into a whole bunch of other stuff. Denunciations coming up at 3 a.m. Marlena Shivo coming up at 3:20. And a whole bunch of other stuff. Debbie Schlussel, she's got movies in the 4 o'clock hour. In the words of the great Bob Barker, help control the pet population, get your dog or cat spayed or neutered.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Well, today is an exciting day. This morning is a pretty exciting morning. This hour is the hour that you want to be awake. Because right now, we are about to see a total lunar eclipse. I don't know if this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. I don't know if this is a once-in-a-year thing. I don't know if it's a once-in-a-month thing. I know that it's pretty rare. And I also know who does know. That is Dr. Sky, Steve Cates, one of my favorite guests, and an incredibly brilliant man, a veteran radio and television broadcaster who has a great deal of experience dealing with astronomy and who is what we call an edutainer. He edutates, he educates, and he entertains. Steve, thank you so much for joining us on the radio this morning on such a remarkable morning.
Well, Frank, good morning. Good to be back on 77 WABC and what I consider to be maybe a first in WABC history. As we go to the telescope, in just a few moments live, where I'm standing here in Phoenix, in my backyard, Phoenix, Arizona, a very clear sky, a little bit of clouds, but generally clear. And in about another 15 minutes or so, Frank, everyone in the listening audience of this radio station that has clear skies or even partly cloudy skies will witness the throes of one of the longest total or partial, depending on who you ask, lunar eclipses in this particular century. And what's so interesting about this, Frank, and I'm going to go to the telescope and do the mind's eye kind of thing and give everybody the basic, you know, information on this. But the last time this occurred with such length, and the length of this eclipse, if you measure it from what we call the penumbra, that's the outer shadow of the Earth itself that goes onto the moon, hardly visible, but a part of the eclipse, to the end of that is over 6 hours long. But the stuff that we're hoping to see, and hope everybody in this listening audience has an opportunity, if you have binoculars, better. If you have a telescope, better. But the naked eye, it will still be a spectacular sight.
So
that lasts some 3 hours and 28 minutes.
Explain to us first, Steve, what exactly is a lunar eclipse? We're going to use the term a lot in the course of the next hour. What is it?
Great question. The alignment of the planets, of course, the sun giving the light, the Earth gets in the way that the light gets onto the surface of the moon. So the Earth is basically a blocker. So what happens if you were standing on the surface of the moon, and obviously only 12 humans went there, nobody's there that we know of now, we would see an object four times the size of the moon that we see in the sky. That's the size of the Earth. And around the edges of the Earth, the light is being refracted or bent around the edges of the Earth. We would see this big ring around the Earth, like that of a special eclipse, like we see when we see a solar eclipse. That's not 100% or maybe just total. And then on the lunar surface, we would see this reddening around the surface. But from the Earth, we're going to see what hopefully will be 97.4%. They call it partial, but to me, 97.4 is like 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Just about. You wouldn't notice the difference. So from the Earth and where I'm standing right now, I'll go to the telescope in a little while, you're going to see the left edge of the moon slowly go into that deep shadow we call the umbra. And this hasn't happened, as I mentioned, to many people that we've been talking to today. The last time that this occurred in length was February 18th of the year 1440. And the next one, for the long duration, you know, beyond that of the 3 hours, happens on February the 8th, get ready, 2669 A.D.
So all right, so it's another 600 years or so.
Right, so this one has great significance. But what I'm doing, Frank, this is interesting. I'm standing next to this telescope that's about 6 feet tall. And why am I telling you that? Because it's a fairly good size instrument, and I'm going to put my eye into the telescope, take a little history here on WABC. I don't think this has ever been done before. We're going to take a look at the surface of the moon, and I'm looking at the moon at about 200 times the magnification with a lunar filter, because the moon is so bright, it wouldn't blind me. But right now, I'm noticing on the left edge of the moon, it's slowly starting to get dark on that side of the moon. And that's quite interesting, because now with the naked eye, I'm seeing this, and I'm hoping everybody in the listening area, if they have even a clear or partly cloudy sky, you're going to start to notice this darkening effect that's taking place on that left edge of the moon. Now, for everybody who's watching with the naked eye, you take a look at the moon and you look at it as like a clock. And there's a little roundy sea, we call it the Sea of Crises, right about the 2 o'clock position from where I'm standing on the disk of the moon. What is that? That's a sea, an ancient lava bed on the moon, that's exactly the same size as Arizona, 350 by 375 miles in diameter. Where you want to look to see the darkening as the face of a clock between, say, 8 and about 11 o'clock on that face of the clock. And that's the left edge of the moon that's slowly gliding into the deepest shadow, Frank, that the Earth has. We call that the umbra. Amazing.
Let's say people are home. They're sleeping beside someone that they can't awake, and they're in a position that they can't go out either with binoculars or telescope or even the naked eye and see the night sky. Is there anywhere online, for instance, that they can watch this lunar eclipse online that's happening now?
There probably are many, Frank, and I don't have an exact thing, but simply do your search on the internet in your browser for just lunar eclipse live. And I'm sure with the technology that's out there, there's so many places around the world or in this hemisphere that's going to have this as it goes into this eclipse itself.
Great.
And that's amazing, because when I look at the moon through this telescope, put my eye back in here, I just want to make people aware that if you look at the surface of the moon very much now with the naked eye, let's say, if you look down about the 5 o'clock position, and a pair of binoculars would help you, there's this large crater that has this streaming ray system coming out of it. This is a crater called Tycho. In fact, this was an asteroid impact maybe 10, maybe 100 million years ago that sent material into the crater, Tycho, about 60 miles in diameter. Imagine that big impactor. And it left this material streaming out called rays. It looks like the navel of an orange. And this is, of course, an interesting one of the biggest impact craters that we can see on the visible face of the moon right now as I'm staring up high in the sky. The moon is in the constellation of Taurus, the bull, right now, and it's slowly starting to take effect. I can see that area, Frank, and hopefully people who are watching with clear or partly cloudy skies, you're looking up, seeing that left edge of the moon between the 8 o'clock and the 11 o'clock position on the clock. That's where that moon is slowly gliding into the umbra, as I mentioned before.
I have a number of questions about this, and I suspect many of our listeners do as well. If you want to call in, they can do so, 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. But as I ask these questions about the lunar eclipse and space in general, as you see what you're seeing, please feel free to just do play-by-play of this lunar eclipse, because I know a lot of people are listening to us as they're watching what's happening in the night
sky.
Thank you. Why does a lunar eclipse only happen during a full moon? Why wouldn't any moon potentially be susceptible to a lunar eclipse?
Very good question. It has to be in a perfect alignment, sacred geometry, we call it. The sun, the earth, and the moon, they need to be within 180 degrees in that particular straight line. When and every month we notice, well, we don't see it, but the earth's shadow is always out there in space, and it just happens infrequently that the moon does glide through that big shadow, because just so everybody can understand, if you're looking with the naked eye, which is most what most people are going to be doing, you see the size of the moon itself. What we want to make sure everybody knows is the umbra, the deep part of the Earth's shadow, is about three times the diameter of the moon that you see. And that penumbra, which is a faint shadow, that's probably about five times. So the moon, on occasion, will glide through that shadow, but every single month, it doesn't do that. It'll either be below it or above it. And the deeper, Frank, that this moon glides into the central part of the Earth's shadow, that, of course, gives us the best concept of what we call the blood red moon, which so many people, I'm sure, have heard about and probably have seen. But the best is yet to come. As I'm looking in the telescope right now, taking my head out of the telescope, looking straight up, I'm seeing that left edge, as I mentioned before, by about 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock from where I'm at. You know, the geometry may be a little different for listeners in different parts of the country, with hopefully a clear sky. But the best is yet to come. So here's what's going to happen. The best time of this eclipse, when you're ready to see the maximum of this particular eclipse, this is going to happen for East Coast time, right around 4 a.m., 2 a.m. here in Phoenix, of course, 1 a.m. in the California Pacific area, or Pacific time, you're going to see something quite interesting. 97.4% of that moon is going to glide into that shadow. And what makes this one of the longest eclipses, this is also important to mention, Frank, is that this is called a micro moon. A lot of times they refer to the opposite moon as a super moon. Micro, because it's now about as far away as the moon can get, 252,000 miles away from the Earth, making the moon look very small. And that moon, that takes, because it's smaller, will glide and take its time going through that shadow, thus increasing the time it's in there.
Why do we not have a lunar eclipse more frequently? I know you mentioned it's probably going to be about 500 or 600 years until the next one. Why is this so rare?
It's rare because this one, because of the moon's distance from the Earth, it's farthest away, which means it's going to creep slower through that shadow, as I mentioned before. And on most cases, when every single month occurs when there's a full moon, again, you have to have that 180-degree alignment. So people may wonder about this, and I always wondered about this in school, and I still wonder sometimes. People say, well, the moon's full tonight. Well, tomorrow night you'll take a look, and the moon looks full to you again, and then maybe the next night. But the truth is, when I'm looking through the telescope, Frank, take it like it was a pie plate. There's no shadows. In order for it to be 180 degrees and totally, you know, in that 180-degree sacred geometry, there's no shadows on the edges of the moon. Mm. And I'm looking right now. And what I can see in one of the southern parts of the moon, this is quite fascinating, and this is a live report, of course. I'm seeing below the Tycho crater in my telescope, the edge of the moon, no shadows, but a whitish area is popping itself up along the limb of the moon. And I know for a fact, looking at the moon maps, that I'm looking at a mountain, get a load of this, that's probably over 26,000 feet tall on the lunar surface. The moon has higher mountains than the Earth has of Mount Everest. People don't recognize that readily. So I'm looking at no shadows. That's the whole reason that the moon or when it's full, it has to have that sacred geometry of 180 degrees. So to the eye, a day or so beyond on either side, the moon to my eye and to most people's eyes, even I wear glasses, not perfect vision, the moon will still look a little bit like it's still full. But then the shadows start to come, and the moon, of course, loses that phase, and it goes back to what we call a gibbous phase, like an egg shape. And then you'll start to see that half moon, and then the beautiful crescent moon, and then onto the new moon. So we don't get an eclipse like that as often, because the moon doesn't pass through that central shadow all that often. And that's the rarity. But because it's so far away, that's the reason that this one is one of the longest in the century, if not the longest.
If people are just tuning in, we're talking with Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky. If you want to learn more about what he's up to, you want to read some more of his work, even listen to some more of his work, you can go to ktar.com. There's a lot of great stuff on the Dr. Sky blog, ktar.com. Now, I know you're a couple of hours earlier than us in Arizona right now.
Yes,
does the time right now, is everybody seeing the lunar eclipse right now, whether you're in California, New York, or Russia, or New Zealand? Is everybody going to see the same thing coming up this hour, or will New Zealand and Russia see it at a different time than we're seeing it?
No, Frank, one of the best questions I've ever been asked, and I mean serious about this. This is an event that's taking place right now for most of North America. The opposite side of the Earth is not seeing this at all. So in other words, the uniqueness of these eclipses, it has to be the right time, the sacred geometry of that 180 degrees, and the timing. So this particular area that's seeing it right now is pretty much all of North America. As you go further east away from, let's say, New York City, out into the ocean, the obvious event is not happening with the strength that it's happening here. And what's happening, too, this is interesting. If we were to wonder where on the Earth would the moon be totally overhead right now, if you look at a map, and by the way, thanks for mentioning KTAR, because I have a blog there that gives everybody all the information that you'd ever want to know about this eclipse, all the other eclipses, the KTAR.com, go to the menu, of course, and you'll go to the Dr. Sky blog. But right now, when you look at some of those maps, and I just remember this from watching this an hour ago, the moon would be straight overhead, if you were out in the Pacific Ocean, south of Baja, you know, in southern Mexico, the Baja Peninsula there, all the way between there and, let's say, Hawaii, if you were swimming around or in a boat, the moon would be straight overhead. So all of North America pretty much is getting to see this right now. But the problem is many areas are still in clouds. But let's hope that the majority of this WABC listening audience is at least able to see what I'm witnessing here, a pronounced darkening to the upper left part of the moon, wherever you're looking. You'll see that on the left edge of the moon.
Maybe this is a question that you can't answer, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it anyway. If you were standing on the moon right now, what would you see? As we're seeing this lunar eclipse from Earth, what would people on the moon see if they were looking in our direction?
Frank, I hope someday a man or a woman who goes to the surface of the moon will be able to say it better than I ever could. But this is the best information, and I do know this. As I mentioned before, a long time ago, having been in acquaintance to some of the moon astronauts, the Apollo astronauts, one in particular, Dr. Edgar Mitchell, I asked him this question when he was coming back to the lunar module with Alan Shepard, first American in space. He said to me, they were the last group to pull, I call it the little rickshaw luggage cart with the lunar rocks. They actually were getting a little bit lost on the surface of the moon. This is not like something that they were, you know, were totally in trouble, but they were kind of a little off course. And I asked him, do you ever look up at the Earth? And he said, yes. He goes, tell everybody this. From the lunar surface, the Earth is four times the size of what we see as our moon in the sky. Now, with this eclipse, if a person were standing there right now in the center of the moon, you would see this big Earth, four times the size of that moon you're seeing right now. And that totality, you'd see this big ring of red light around, or orange light around, the edges of the Earth, and that's the atmosphere. So however clear that atmosphere is, it makes the determinant color on the surface of the moon. The thicker the air, let's say about when Mount Pinatubo blew, Frank, back in the early 80s, I watched an eclipse from New Jersey when I lived in the New York area, and that eclipse, because of the dust and volcanic dust in the air, the moon literally disappeared from the sky during the eclipse. So it would be a most magnificent sight. And imagine this. Let's say that the United States or the opposite side of the Earth was in view. In the center, around that red and orange annulus of light, you would see the nighttime, all the different cities of the world, wherever you're looking at that hemisphere. I just can't wait to hear the story, and wouldn't you love to go? And I'd love to go, too. Wouldn't that be a heck of a trip?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
That'd be amazing.
Absolutely. Need to take a quick break. We're going to continue with Dr. Sky, a.k.a. Well, he is Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky. You can read more about his work at ktar.com. If you have questions about what you're about to see or what you're seeing, give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. It's 1-800-848-WABC. We're going to continue as we do live coverage of the lunar eclipse straight ahead on the other side of midnight.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Fly me to the moon, let me play among the stars, and let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, baby, kiss me. With
the great Frank Sinatra, Fly Me to the Moon. If you want to see, if you're in a position where you can't look outside or whatever for whatever reason your view is obstructed, if you want to see this lunar eclipse, which we're observing this hour, I want to thank Ellen. She has just posted a link to the YouTube of this in our Facebook group. So you can go to facebook.com/groups/RadioMorano, and you can see from the perspective of Texas, exactly what's happening. We're talking, we're getting some lunar eclipse play-by-play, as we will every time this happens. Next time will be about 600 years from now, from a guy that knows this better than anybody, Dr. Sky, Steve Cates, who is a veteran radio and television broadcaster and an edutainer with a great deal of expertise in astronomy and the sky. What are you seeing now at this moment, Steve?
Well, the live report continues here on WABC. Frank, thank you. This is what's happening with the naked eye, which is what most people are probably going to be watching it with. I'm seeing the darkening starting to take place around the 10 and 11 o'clock position on the face of a clock, let's say. And when I look in the telescope, I'm back to the telescope, I'm noticing, and this is probably for more advanced observers who may have a telescope out there and they're viewing, we can do this play by play. I'm seeing the left edge of the moon. There's a large, bright crater on the surface of the moon called Aristarchus. And when the Apollo astronauts went around the moon, this is one of the areas that they wanted to send a lunar lander there, you know, an exploration team to the surface of the moon. It's one of the brightest craters on the moon, and it's actually, the shadow is actually now encroaching onto Aristarchus, and around it is an area called Schroeder's Valley on the surface of the moon. This is somehow where millions of billions of years ago, magma, you know, fluid rock probably flowed through this area on the surface of the moon. But back to the live view, this is really cool. You can actually see with the naked eye the curvature of that area we call the umbra. So if you imagine if you traced it all the way out in the sky, how much bigger it would be to make a full circle, and the moon is slowly encroaching into that shadow because it's moving to the left in the sky, Frank. Every time we see the moon, remember, the moon's diameter is a half of a visual degree in the sky. And guess what? The sun is also approximately a half a degree in the sky. So then when we reverse the concept from lunar eclipses, that's why that sacred geometry is even more incredible. Where in the solar system do we have two objects? Because the moon is so close to the Earth and the sun is 93 million miles away. From the Earth's perspective, they're pretty much the same size. And very few places in the known solar system have the ability to have eclipses like the solar type 2, where they almost match up perfectly at times. Total when they do, and annular when the moon is smaller, like say you put a nickel and you put a dime on top of it, you still see the ring of the nickel. So this is fascinating. It's all about geometry and celestial mechanics and motion.
If people have questions, give us a call, 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Max in Manhattan. Max, you're on with Steve Cates. Hello.
My call. Yeah, thank you for taking my call. My question is, if I'm in Manhattan and I'm looking up at the sky to see where the eclipse is taking place, should I be looking to the west?
Yes, good question, Max. Thank you for calling in. This moon for the area of the New York City area will definitely be to the west, maybe more to the northwest because we're 2 hours difference in time. So, yes, the moon should be visible if you have at least a fairly decent view of the west, northwest in the sky. That's the area to take a look and enjoy this eclipse, hopefully, even in partly cloudy skies.
Steve, you mentioned a red moon earlier.
Yes.
Does the moon... What causes the moon to turn red from our perspective? Is that something that only happens during a lunar eclipse, or is that something that happens more regularly?
Well, going back to the answer when we talk about eclipses, again, if you took a look from the surface of the moon, if you looked at that four times the size of our Earth's moon in the sky from the lunar surface, what you would see during this maximum of totality, you would see the ring of light around the Earth. That's the atmosphere, and the light is refracted or bent around the edges. So in this case, it filters out all the blue light. So that red light, or as deep as it can get, it gets very deep if the atmosphere around the edges of the Earth are cloudy or have the volcanic dust in there. So it's basically caused, Frank, by atmospheric particles. It could even be a long line of thunderstorms on the edges of the Earth that change the perspective of how dark these eclipses get. And as I mentioned before, I was shocked when I was back in New Jersey in the 80s. We watched this eclipse and had the telescopes out, and the moon literally disappeared. And I was going, what the heck's going on? But it was due to the fact that Mount Pinatubo had exploded, and volcanic dust is no good for many things. Obviously not good for jet engines if airliners are flying through that kind of cloud. But the ash would then darken the amount of light getting on the moon. But the red color, or the so-called blood moon, is indicative of the refracting light on the edges of the Earth's atmosphere.
And are all lunar eclipses the same color? If people watch this in the year 2669, are they going to see a moon the same color as we're seeing this morning?
It's hard to tell. And again, I hope there's a civilization in that year, because obviously when people talk about climate change, who knows what will happen then? Maybe they've solved the issue, but it's hard to tell. It's always dependent on what weather is happening on the edges of the Earth from where you're viewing. And it could be, and I'm predicting this, I mean, this is no scientific super prediction here on WAPC, but simply this, you'll probably see wherever the stations are heard, and now it's heard everywhere, you'll be able to hopefully see this time an orangey, almost maybe a pumpkin color and at the least, and maybe, because it's a 97.4% totality, almost totality, you may even get the blood red moon. We're not sure, but I can see, Frank, again, going back to my live view here, the moon looks so tiny. And let me tell people why this is considered a very long eclipse again, because the moon is at its farthest point. We're calling this a micro moon as opposed to a, quote, supermoon. And remember, a supermoon is not an astronomy term. It came from astrology. But going back to what this moon is, it's farthest from the Earth almost as it can get from the Earth. It's about 252,000 miles away. But this particular moon, the long name for this one, there's two different ones. It would become the full micro beaver moon or the full micro frosty moon. Pick your choice and there you go.
why is it called a beaver moon? What makes it a beaver moon?
Well, it's interesting. In North America, and the Farmer's Almanac had a lot to do with this, Native American cultures, when we go back to all the great Native American tribes here in North America, they had special names for the moon because many of them, of course, in the times that we're talking about, hundreds and hundreds of years ago, they lived mostly in the outdoor, okay, in the small homes and habitation that they had. They had these names. And why they call this the full beaver moon, at this particular time, the beavers are damming up creeks and rivers and things like that, and they're foraging for food. So that's one of the names that stuck. And some of these moons are quite interesting. If you look at the December moon, sometimes they just call it the full cold moon, obviously for cold in North America at that time of the year. But another of the great antiquity names for the December moon is the long night full moon. Because think of it this way. In the summer, we know how long the days are because the sun is in the constellation on the day of summer in Gemini. In Gemini, the sun takes about 14 hours to cross the sky. But if you go 6 months to the opposite side, when the moon finds itself in December skies, it's in that same constellation, Gemini. And guess what? It rides in the night sky the longest because it's coming close to the solstice But each month, Frank, just to give it in summation, Native American cultures here have named so many of these moons, the full sturgeon moon that we have probably around August for the fish in the Great Lakes that spawn. We have other great moons. And, you know, it's just so amazing. But a super moon, like I mentioned before, is really a new title. And it's not really from astronomy. It's because that moon, when it's called a super moon, is the closest that it will get if it lies at a position called perigee. And not to conduct class here this early morning, but the closest a moon gets to the Earth, we call it perigee. And the farthest it gets away is called apogee. So we have both of these things through a calendar month. But right now, the moon to me looks pretty small, and it's going to take a long time to go into this particular shadow. And Frank, I'm seeing about, maybe a fifth of the moon now covered up into the Earth's umbra and the shadow there. I'm seeing it now more towards the 10 or 11 o'clock position from my angle here in the Phoenix skies.
Well, there's a lot of there's a lot of comparison to a lunar eclipse that took place in October of 1967. You alluded to that earlier. How is this lunar eclipse the same? How is it different from the one that took place in 1967?
Well, at that time, the moon, and I don't have the exact figure in front of me, I was just saying that the moon itself at that time was probably a closer moon than it is on what we're looking at right now. But I want to give the audience a little heads up on something. Now, for instance, if you're not able to see this, and let's say this, the spoiler could be the weather's not good. It's raining where you are, and you're not able to log onto a computer quickly, whatever. Just mark these dates down, because this is another amazing event. Now, you're going to say, maybe not you, but people might say, well, I thought these things were rare. The date of May the 15th into the 16th of 2022, we get a total, with the word total this time, not a partial deep like this, we get a total eclipse of the moon, and we get to see it. So that'll be interesting. But the times of these eclipses, I know, Frank, for people that cannot stay up into the early morning hours, and those have the different date, let's say they have a daytime work schedule that they can't be up, some of the people love to see the moon at the time when it's an evening eclipse. And what better way for some? You have a dinner at, say, 5 or 6 p.m., and lo and behold, the moon rises, and there it goes for the eclipse. So that's convenient eclipse. But these things are interesting. And another note that I should mention, too, about eclipses. When you have an eclipse of the moon, you will, 14 days later, find yourself having a solar eclipse. Not necessarily total, but get a load of this. In early December, about 14 days from now, you're going to experience a total solar eclipse. And of all places that are pretty much inhospitable, this one will take place for lots of penguins standing on the icy shoals and icebergs in Antarctica. And there are people that travel to see these. And I have eclipse fever, Frank. I mean, I want to remind the audience that if you think lunar eclipses are cool, this is great. You don't need eye protection for this. But folks, Frank, this is important. The next major total solar eclipse, it's another of the great American total solar eclipses. It follows the one that happened August 21st of 2017. We were up in Idaho watching this. But the next one, folks, jot it down, look it up. It's going to be good. Is April the 8th of 2024. And I said that a couple of years ago, and it seemed like it was in the distant Star Trek future. But it's only around the corner. And that will be an event that people will witness across a good part of the United States. It starts off in the Pacific. It moves across Mexico. The best and longest part of this eclipse would be in high mountains in northern Mexico, pretty much inaccessible. It comes across the great state of Texas, and we're planning to be, get a load of this, in that city of Dallas, Texas. And we're looking to be at this most sacred location. We're looking to be in Dealey Plaza, where that horrific event happened. We all know what happened there. But can you imagine in the middle of the day, standing in that sacred location, looking up in the Dallas skies, hopefully clear, you get 4.5 minutes of a total solar eclipse. And believe me, if you haven't seen the total solar eclipse, here's a chance. And it goes all the way up. Get a load of this. Not just in Texas. It goes up into Arkansas, parts of Oklahoma. It moves up and in a place, which is interesting, Carbondale, Illinois, where people got to see this eclipse, Frank, total back in 2017. It crosses the same farm field, if you lived in Carbondale, Illinois, that it did back in 2017. And then it arches its way up. Get a load of this. For the New York State folks,
downtown Buffalo gets to see the eclipse in the middle of the day.
Wow.
And it moves up along the St. Lawrence River, moves across Nova Scotia, and out to the sea. Have you ever seen a total solar eclipse?
No, no. About 6 or 7 years ago, I don't know if this was a total solar, but I remember getting the special glasses to watch it outside.
Yes.
And it was a big deal, and it was quite a sight to behold. It was really something. We had to take one more break here. If people have questions for Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky, now's the time. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. And you're going to want to check out his blog, ktar.com. Check out the Dr. Sky blog there. There's a ton of great material on there. I steal from it all the time for content that you hear on this show. ktar.com, 800-848-9222. We're doing a live radio eclipse watch party. This, as far as I'm concerned, has got to be a first in the annals of radio history. If it's not a first, I'm betting it's at least a second. We'll continue with your questions next. 800-848-WABC. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Well, it's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow. You know I'm trying to please to the calling of your heartstrings that play soft and low. You know the night's magic seems to whisper and hey. You know the soft moonlight seems to shine in your blush.
Moon dance. We're doing a radio moon dance this morning. If you are driving, we don't want you to look up at the lunar eclipse while you're driving. If you want to pull over, that's one thing, and it's certainly something I'd be doing. If you're home and you're not in a position to get outside, or if for whatever reason the weather where you are is obscuring the view of the moon and the lunar eclipse, you can go to my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. We have the YouTube link to the partial lunar eclipse that's happening right now. We're getting some play-by-play from Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky, who is watching this with us live from Arizona as this all unfolds. Steve, what are you seeing right now from your perspective?
Well, Frank, this is interesting. I'm seeing that umbra of the moon, and now if I look here on the face of a clock from my location, the darkening is up by around 10 and 11 o'clock and moves all the way about to 1 o'clock. But what I'm noticing is a dramatic change in the sky here, Frank. I'm seeing stars that were not visible before, easier to see because the moon is now going into that darkening phase. But I got another special treat that I'm seeing here, and maybe other people around the country or the North America, wherever you're being listened to, and it's far and wide. I'm seeing, Frank, an unusual thing. There's some light clouds that are above me, and at this time of year, you can see around the sun and the moon, I'm seeing a 22-degree lunar halo. And I'm going to take some pictures of this, which is interesting, after this particular show. I'm seeing the moon in the center, and 22 degrees around it is this big circular ice cloud that goes around. It's an amazing sight. And you've probably seen that in the daytime where you see these things called sun dogs. If you look to the left or right of the sun because of ice clouds, you'll see this prism-like shining or a fake sun on either side of the sun. And I'm seeing that right now with the moon. I'm sure for people who can see these guys in the western United States, that's amazing.
800-848-WABC. Gary in Ohio has a question. Gary, you're on with Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky. Hello.
Yes. When you're looking through your telescope, isn't your image like upside down?
Yes. You're very much astute in this. Absolutely. When I'm looking through this telescope, top is bottom and bottom is top and the opposite side. So when I'm describing this, I rather say it like I've been doing the narration here. With the live sky, with the naked eye, I'm getting to see the moon with the live sky describing the position of that shadow. But in the telescope, you're absolutely right that the image is inverted so that the opposite is what you think. North is south and south is north.
Good question, Gary. 800.
Yeah, I just wanted to check on that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Yes, sir. 800-848-WABC.
That's 800-848-9222. Pretty exciting stuff that we're in the midst of here.
Oh, yeah.
Steve, while I have you here, let me ask you about what's happening when it comes to space travel and space exploration in general. There was a lot of news this week about a Russian anti-satellite weapon test.
Oh, yes.
What exactly happened this week with respect to this anti-satellite weapon?
Great question, and it's very much a big news story. What we know, and this is not confirmed by, you know, we don't know the exact missile platform that the Russians use, but let's say for simplicity, a ground-based missile fired up into the low atmosphere, which we call about 300 miles above the surface of the Earth. The object that they destroyed, here it is, Cosmos 1408. What was it? It was a satellite called an ELINT satellite, Electronic Intelligence Gathering Satellite. It was launched back on September the 16th of 1962, 1982, excuse me. This satellite was replaced, it replaced a satellite known as the Cosmos 1378. They, the Russians, for unknown reasons, I guess, want to test out a missile platform. They did something, I think, so egregious. The Chinese did this back around 2007 or 2008. They intentionally shot out of the atmosphere. You can't say sky per se. It's the atmosphere. They destroyed something in space just to see what would happen with the debris. But here's the problem. There's about a debris field of some 1,500 or more pieces that could range, and I don't know this, Frank, and when I don't know something, I'll be honest with the audience and you, of course. But these pieces of these particles, they could range up to maybe a foot or maybe even larger in diameter. Wow. But the little tiny ones are so important. So what they did, the International Space Station had a red alert. They decided to get the crew into their Progress return vehicles and the Crew Dragon spacecraft in the event that this particular debris field might come too close. But here's the problem. This spacecraft was at 300 miles above the Earth, they say. The International Space Station is somewhere about 260 miles above the Earth on average. So the problem is, where is this debris field going to go? And more than likely, because of solar pressure, it's going to push that debris field lower and lower. So it would be like, it's almost, well, I don't want to get too dramatic here. I don't know for sure, but it could be like a head-on collision or an attack from the rear with this material. I mean, that's a lot of stuff that you didn't have to blow up in space, but apparently they did. It's called an ASAP test. And America has this. I mean, for the longest time, Frank, we've had a special F-15, which had a special rocket that was designed to be able to shoot down satellites if we ever had to. And they, can you imagine the ride? The pilot in the F-15 would pull up and yank up almost to a vertical and go high up into the sky, firing a rocket that would be able to do exactly what the Russians did. But this presents a whole new problematic thing, you think, about space warfare. And this is a big no-no. I mean, Anthony Blinken, Secretary of State, other world leaders are condemning this. But what's a slap on the wrist when there's problems that are going to come from this debris from this satellite destruction?
No doubt about it. Now, in speaking about the two subjects we've covered so far, space travel in general and the moon specifically, it came out this week that the United States may not make its goal of getting back to the moon by the year 2025, may not happen until the year 2026. Fill us in on this, Steve. And I know we've talked about this before, but why is it that we were able to make it to the moon in 1969, and yet 50 years later, with all the advances in technology, it seems like such a chore to be able to make it back to the moon?
Well, Frank, the simple answer for me is this. Back in the 60s, when the president wanted to make this happen and pretty much insisted that it happen, it did happen. We had the collective geniuses, engineers, men and women working on this 24 hours a day. But today, we have a problem. It's called the funding for projects like this, even though Elon Musk in the private area, Jeff Bezos, they're doing well. But it all boils down to a problem, and this is the problematic thing. They have some real issues about the lunar lander that they're supposed to be able to do. Bezos and SpaceX has been fighting over this in court. I don't have all the details.
But I always thought that that whole idea of going back by 2024, it was President Trump that I believed, and even before him, I think it was President Bush and even President Obama that said we would do this by the early 20s. No, it's probably going to take us longer because there's still a lot of missing parts to this. And they also want to build a station, a small station, that's around the moon to make this Artemis project work the best. So there's a lot of different, you know, funding issues. There's a lot of design issues. My guess, if anybody were to ask, I would say the return to the moon could be done very quickly. But because of all the political stuff that's involved and funding, I'm going to predict that we won't return to the moon until at least maybe 2028 or 2029.
Wow.
And let's see if that comes true. Hopefully sooner.
Chugging with Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky. You want to weigh in, you're welcome to. 800-848-9222. That's 800-848-WABC. There was a story in, I believe it was Time Magazine a week or so ago.
Mm-hmm.
They referred to this object that was being seen as a second moon. Did you see that, Steve? And
sure did.
Can you let us in on what exactly that is? Is it actually a second moon?
Well, I had to ask you, though, Frank, for more details. You're referring to the new planet that's out, theoretically, or you're saying another object that orbits the Earth?
It was another object that orbits the Earth.
Okay. There's a couple of concepts here. There's a tiny little asteroid called Kruent, which is one of they call it. It's a little asteroid that has somehow locked onto Earth's orbit. And it kind of could be called, you know, maybe a mini moon, but it may not stay there for a long, long time. And the Earth does occasionally pull in some of these little asteroids that get kind of hooked up in our own little gravity system. Nothing to be worried about because the moon and the Earth, it's a binary system. This little thing, Kruent, which is a tiny little object, maybe probably no larger than, I'm not guessing, but I'm saying probably more than likely maybe 500 feet across, which is pretty sizable for an asteroid body. It can get pulled into the Earth's gravity, and then eventually the Earth will push it out. But here's another interesting story. Another object was detected by folks actually here in Arizona with their big telescopes, and they were tracking something and says, you know, this thing looks like it orbits the Earth. And they were right. But guess what they found out? It wasn't an asteroid of any type. It was a booster rocket of one of the Saturns that went to the moon that was still floating around out there in space, and it actually hooked into the Earth's orbit. So there's many different concepts of these things, but we know today that the Earth singularly has the one object I'm staring up right now from our Arizona skies, the moon. And a live update, Frank, we're looking now at maybe more than a third of the moon is in the Earth's shadow. That shadow, from where I'm seeing it, is now around the 11 and 12 o'clock to 1 o'clock position on the face of the clock.
We're talking with Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky, doing a live play-by-play of the lunar eclipse. This will be the longest lunar eclipse of the century, and we are not going to see something like this for quite some time. If you want to see this, if you're in a position where you can't see it in the night sky, you can go on to my Facebook page, facebook.com/MoranoFan. I have a link to the YouTube visual of this. It's quite a sight to behold, and it's pretty interesting to watch, and it's going to be a while before we see something like this. Hey, Steve, before we run out of time here, something else that we observed this week, which we're probably not going to see on a daily basis anyway, is a spiral galaxy, 120 million light years from Earth, and that was spotted by the Hubble Space Telescope. Pretty breathtaking to see this spiral galaxy. They're calling it MRK-1337. Anything that we can learn from looking at this spiral galaxy? Anything special about this?
Well, I think it's another garden variety galaxy, but the issue is the distance, and it's not really that far. It's just that the Hubble detected something that they didn't see before. But let's look at spiral galaxies. Our Milky Way, as we know, is this massive spiral galaxy, maybe up to 1 trillion stars. Like I said, start counting now. Could you imagine? We couldn't do it in a lifetime if we tried. But the interesting thing about it, Frank, is that deep within these galaxies, the problematic thing is, why do not these galaxies just eventually just dissipate by spinning out and all this material moving out into space? So now these two subject matters, one more particular to galaxies and what we can learn, is we're trying to understand what truly is behind something called dark matter. And a female astronomer named Vera Rubin, who was an amazing individual, I mean, she passed on to the infinite not too long ago. Her whole life was spent trying to fight and justify, trying to get herself a PhD as a female in the world of astronomy. And at that time, it was very different. You know, they weren't looking too kindly on women going into this particular field. But one of her areas of specialization, Frank, was to talk about and actually study something which recently has been really defined as dark matter. And we really don't know what this is. It's something that maybe binds and glues things, not like a glue per se, but it bonds things in space. It fills what Einstein tried to think of. What's this matter material, something in space that you can't see and quantify, is filling space. And he, in his latter years, he referred to this. He never could figure it out. He referred to it, get a load of this, better to say it around Halloween, spooky action at a distance. And this is what he tried so hard. But Vera Rubin, she was the one who really pioneered the study of what we call dark matter. And I'm just saying, with this new revelation with the Hubble Space Telescope, it just gives us more hopeful understanding of how these galaxies evolve. Because everything, Frank, as we all know, is moving outward. And everything that you look at in the sky, isn't this beautiful? It's a big time machine. Everything has a distance, the Earth to the Moon. Right now, 251,000 miles. I'm looking to the lower part of the sky here. The brightest star in the heavens is a star called Sirius. I'm looking at it right now. And it's 8.6 light years away from us. As the eclipse continues, Frank, we can get to see the stars are slowly coming out as they should. But the whole universe is just a big time machine. And it's so fascinating to even try to ponder. I, in the human mind, really can't, I guess, grasp this. It's something that's why I'm so interested in, and like others, in trying to understand this. And it's always a lifetime passion to continue.
Steve, there are a lot of people that listen to this show via podcast. They might be asleep now at listening, mm-hmm. not live at 2:55, but they may mm-hmm. listen 2, 3, 4 hours from now when they wake up.
Sure.
Is there anything that's going to be different about the sky they see when it's sort of dawn, when they're waking up mm-hmm. in the morning or in the wee hours of the morning? Sure. Is there anything that's going to be sure. different for them?
Absolutely. Just prepare for the next evening, because obviously the sun at this time of the year takes its low arc in the sky. It moves to the zodiac signs where it goes now. It moves through a region of the sky that we call Ophiuchus, which is called the 13th sign of the zodiac, into Scorpius. But when the evening comes, if you're a podcast listener, here's some really interesting tips. When the sun sets, look into the west sky, the northwest, west, southwest, whichever your direction you look, but it is the west. You'll see this bright beacon of light. It's Venus. And it's interesting. This is the brightest of all the planets. It's a beautiful object. I took the telescope and looked at it. And for the telescopic observers, that listen to podcasts, there are probably many of them, Venus right now looks like a crescent moon. And it's amazing because the planet is filled with nothing but clouds. So it shines back, and it is the most crisp little crescent that you probably ever get to see. And when you show it to people, they go, wait a minute. How'd you get the moon to be so small? Well, it's because these planets, Mercury and Venus, because they're closer in, they can show these crescent phases, whereas some of these other planets that are beyond us don't. And don't forget, when you look in the sky, this is a beautiful thing, a more romantic thing for people that maybe are listening on podcasts. When you see the sun setting, look to the opposite side of the sky. And many people wonder, they see this arc of pink light in the sky with like a dome on top of it of the darkness. It's actually called the Belt of Venus. Now, it has nothing to do with Venus, but this is the name that it was given because it's got some beauty. It's supposed to be the romance, you know, a beautiful thing like the goddess of love and beauty. But it's fascinating. What it is scientifically is the Earth's shadow casting out into space as you're standing on this planet. If you could look out into space there, just like the moon's doing right now, and the Earth is casting its shadow onto the moon, that shadow is present in the belt of Venus when you look to the opposite side of the sky, just after the sun sets in a cloudless sky. It's beautiful.
It certainly is. Let me squeeze in at least one more call here before we run out of time. Roger is in Massachusetts. Roger, what's your question for Dr. Sky?
Yeah, thanks. I heard that Japan was trying to develop a method of capturing the space junk up there. Is that true?
Yes, it is, but I can give you more definitive information. Again, let's go back to the Chinese. The Chinese are doing this, and they launched a satellite. Get a load of this. This is interesting. It's called a satellite crusher. Its real name in Chinese is the Shijian 21. And what's its purpose? It's to go up into low Earth orbit and exactly do what people are wanting to do, is kind of be like a garbage collector. It has a long robotic arm supposedly on it. And what it can do is supposedly grab things that we don't want to be up there. And I'm not sure of this, and I'm always honest, it probably has a way to compact it and push it into like a cylinder. And that cylinder may be able to be returned to the Earth, or a better solution is sent out into orbit to the sun. But that's interesting. It's China is the one that I read about, not Japan. But, you know, then the people have come up with an idea, too, that if the Chinese can do that, well, could they then go to a satellite that they don't like and then do a little pinch on the thing and maybe knock it out of its orbit? Who knows?
Thanks for the call, Roger. As we wind down here, Steve, what should people, if they are watching the lunar eclipse, either live via YouTube or with the naked eye or with binoculars or with the telescope, what should people be on the lookout for the next hour or so?
Absolutely. Right now, the live view, Frank, as we conclude, the moon is now pretty much half into the Earth's umbra. If you're looking at this anywhere where WABC is heard, far and wide, continue to keep looking, because at the moment, for the East Coast time, 4 a.m., approximately 4 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, you know, convert it to your own time zone, the moon will be as much of it as it possibly can be into the umbra. Now, you might get to see, hopefully, I'm a predictor of this, I don't know, it's not like predicting a winning of a sports team here, but what we can say is more than likely you'll get to see an orange glow on the surface of the moon, and that's what we call the Chinese lantern effect, when the moon looks like a three-dimensional orb, like a cinder.
Steve,
I got to
end it there. Thank you so much for being so generous with your time on such an august occasion. I'll look forward to our next conversation.
Always a pleasure, Frank. Thank you.
Steve Cates, a.k.a. Dr. Sky. Check him out, ktar.com. Denunciations next. Keep asking questions.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
Good morrow, everybody. Admit it. This is the portion of the week that you've been waiting for. This is the portion of the week where you make an effort to make sure you're awake, you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. If you're listening on the podcast, it's one where you go from passively listening to actively listening. You want to know what people, places, or entities of any sort are on the naughty list. You want to know who is being denounced, and it is indeed time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents Denunciations.
And I must begin by denouncing Mexico. Mexico is the world's deadliest country for journalists. This is according to a report. This is the third year in a row where the Committee to Protect Journalists, which investigates attacks against the press globally, has found that Mexico is the deadliest country in the world when it comes to journalists. So there you have it. That's actually not the denunciation music. It should be in there. If you don't have something that says denunciation music, then don't worry about it. We'll go into it dry. Now, I also wanted to announce the New York City sanitation workers who were falsifying COVID vaccine cards. New York City is investigating reports that Department of Sanitation workers used fake vaccination cards to get around the city's vaccination mandate. I'm not for any of these vaccination mandates. I think this is way, way, way inappropriate for city government. But you should not be faking this stuff. You should certainly not be faking this stuff for money, as far as I'm concerned. So now you have several dozen employees that have been been suspended for submitting false vaccination cards, and now they've been suspended without pay. I do not understand this for the life of me. Now, you could get a real vaccination for free, and it comes with a real vaccination card, and that happens to keep you from getting hospitalized from COVID. And yet, people are still going with the fake stuff. I do not understand it for the life of me. If you want to come in on any of the denunciations, by the way, give me a call, 800-848-9222. Speaking of COVID, I want to denounce Newsmax White House correspondent Emerald Robinson. She has been permanently suspended from Twitter, which I don't love, but for repeatedly violating the COVID misinformation policy. Now, after regaining access to her account, she received her fifth violation, resulting in a permanent ban. Now, last week, she tweeted a message claiming that COVID vaccines contain a bioluminescent marker called luciferase so that you can be tracked. Now, again, I don't love that she was banned from Twitter for this, because you have a right to be dishonest. You have a right to be wrong. But this is a journalist. She's supposed to be informing people. And yet she is spreading the kind of misinformation that journalists should be preventing. There's no tracker in the disease. In the vaccine. And for her to do this is way out of line, as far as I'm concerned. I want to denounce Sophia Yarista. Sophia Yarista is some sort of a musician, a rocker, I guess, a rock star, I suppose. I never heard of her before, to be honest. There we go. Thank you, Matt. And she urinated on a fan recently. She's now apologized for urinating on a fan. She said, I've always pushed the limits in music and on stage. That night, I pushed the limits too far. Now, I do not understand for the life of me. You're a musician. People are paying to come see you. I don't know what would possess you to think it's a wise idea to urinate on your fans. I've spoken before a lot of live audiences, and there have been a lot of times when I've spoken before live audiences and needed to use the restroom. Never once have I ever urinated on any of my fans. And that is something that I hope to be able to say until the day I die. And that is not something that Sophia Yarista can say. I want to denounce this DoorDash driver in Brentwood, California, who, you know, I don't know why we have so much toilet-related denunciation today, but if the shoe fits. This DoorDash driver was captured on video using the building, the apartment building's lobby in Brentwood as a toilet. This person defecated onto the lobby's trash can and left feces over the area. Now, if you're a DoorDash driver or anyone, I mean, do you have that much of an emergency that you need to use the trash can to defecate? This is disgusting. This is totally and completely disgusting. How about if you have to go to the bathroom that bad, you stop at a coffee shop, a diner, a public restroom, anywhere, before you make your delivery? DoorDash driver, defecating DoorDash driver, I do denounce you. I also want to denounce this woman in Louisiana who bit off part of a police officer's ear. They are trying to track this woman down. They have not yet arrested her, but a woman in Houma, Louisiana, was caught on video, and I'm sure they will catch this woman, was caught on video biting the ear of one of the responding officers who was trying to break up a fight. And she apparently, this was like Mike Tyson style. She bit a large portion of the right ear completely off. So authorities are saying they know the identity of this woman, and they've obtained a warrant for her arrest. As it stands now, she has not been arrested. The injured officer is recovering after being treated at a local medical facility. Now, this just underscores what a difficult job it is to be a police officer. You go to work, all you want to do is come home. You want to do your job, maybe catch some bad guys, maybe protect some people, and go home to your family. What you don't want is to have your ear bitten off. But apparently that is too much to ask in Louisiana. I want to denounce Bradley Matheny. Bradley Matheny has been sentenced to federal prison for making over $250,000 in phony postage. Now, I take this very seriously because I'm a lover of the post office. I mail letters just about every day. And this fella, this loser, forged and counterfeited over $250,000 in postage and made false statements on international customs forms. So this fella, 43 years old, from Iowa, received this prison term after he was found guilty of 7 counts of postage meter stamp forgery and counterfeiting and 3 counts of export violations. Now, I am not going to be shedding any tears for him. Bradley Matheny, I do denounce you. I also want to denounce palm oil fatty acids. New study shows that palm oil fatty acids actually, according to what they do in mice, they actually raise your risk of metastasis. Excuse me. So these fatty acids, these palm oil fatty acids, are not good for you. They rewire your cells, and it could even cause cancer. So we all have cancer cells in our body. And it's when those cancer cells metastasize that they become dangerous. And that's when they become what we know as cancer. And now we know that these saturated fatty acids, such as palmitic acid that's found in palm oil, can promote the expression of genes associated with tumors. And these cancer cells have a memory of exposure to this palmitic acid and remain highly metastatic. So if you don't want cancer, stay away from palm oil. Penultimately, I want to denounce the state of West Virginia. Oh no, it's not a commonwealth like its cousin, regular Virginia. The state of West Virginia is the worst state in the country, according to the American Lung Association, for smoking. The worst state in the nation for smoking, and among the worst states for new lung cancer cases and screening. So, West Virginia, you better get your act together. Stomp out those cigarettes. Stop smoking. Stop getting lung cancer. And finally, I want to denounce some friends of mine. These are friends of mine. Excuse me, I just took a sip of my Java. Today is Rita Cosby's birthday. Actually, technically yesterday was. So it's no longer her birthday for the last 3 hours. But Dominic Carter one-upped me, okay? And he brought in a cake and balloons and all sorts of stuff. So I said, all right, I'll show him. I'm going to bring in something for Rita on her actual birthday, which was yesterday. So at 6:57 yesterday morning, I text message everybody I know who bakes. I text message my friend Miriam Flynn, who everybody calls Booty. I text messaged Danielle Johnson, whose daughter Madison is a very accomplished baker. I text messaged my friend Vinny Ignizio, whose daughter Lena is a pretty accomplished baker in spite of her youth. And I text messaged my friend Jessica Rios Lantry, the wife of civil court judge-elect Brendan Lantry, who you might remember got denounced last week for unrelated matters. Lo and behold, I said, look, today's Rita Cosby's birthday. I'd really appreciate it if any of you could bake something that I could bring it into the radio station. Text messaged our next guest, Marlena Shivo, because she has helped her daughters bake cupcakes from time to time. And so, lo and behold, this text message went out at 6:57 in the morning. They had the whole day to bake something. Lo and behold, I come in here. Nothing. Zip, zilch, zero, nada. Nothing from Booty, nothing from Marlena, nothing from Madison, nothing from Lena, nothing from Jessica. Not a single baked good for Rita's birthday. Now, it makes me look dumb that my colleague Dominic Carter puts in all this effort, all this work, all this thought into remembering Rita Cosby's birthday, and here I can't even be bothered to get five close friends of mine to bake something. Not only that, they didn't even respond to my text message. Now, I understand you're too busy or whatever. Respond to my text message. Say, you can't bake anything. Or, you know, you don't care about Rita Cosby's birthday. Whatever. Who wouldn't care about Rita's birthday? It should be a national holiday. But Marlena, Booty, Madison, Lena, and who else? Jessica. I do denounce you. All right, Marlena is here. We'll see what she has to say for herself. There are a number of issues that I want to bring up with her, and we'll take your calls as well. 800-848-9222.
It's The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano, 77 WABC.
Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Well, I don't know about you, but whenever I hear Marlena Shivo is in studio and on the show, I get an extra pep in my step. I have been enveloped with a new aura of energy because I am prepared to be simultaneously entertained and informed. Marlena Shivo is a satirist, a veteran media producer, a writer, and she's done a lot of other things. She's also a COVID survivor and a mother, and she is a good friend of mine, kind enough to join us in studio. Hello, Marlena.
Oh, hello, Frank. You forgot to say that I was your nemesis, or at least I am at the moment.
Well, no, you're not my nemesis, but you are denounced. I mean, here
you denounced me because you needed another denouncement. That's really what
that's
it
true.
Came
I
down to.
10.
I was the fall guy.
You were.
I was asleep in the
fall
green
gal.
Room.
Fall person. Yes.
Fall they. Listen, I was asleep. I needed to get some shut eye because this is not. Let's pull the curtain up.
Okay.
I've been with you for the past like 9 hours.
Uh-huh.
Have I
Fair
not?
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm envious of you. You got to take a nap.
So. Yeah. Okay. First of all, so I should not be denounced considering that, like, I have been up for 24 hours,
but,
except for the past hour. Number one, I know you've been up too.
But here, Rita Cosby, such a nice lady, and you can't even bake her a cupcake like you would for your daughter's birthday or something?
Let me get this straight. You want me to bake a cake for Rita?
Or cupcakes. Fine. Anything. Any
thought. You want me to bake a baked good?
Yes.
Come in, see you socially. And then come on the show hours later.
Right. Exactly.
And what would I be doing with these said cupcakes or other baked goods?
I don't know. You could have brought them to the studio. We put them in the refrigerator, put them in the kitchen for everybody. These gavones will eat anything. All right. Well, now we know for next year.
Talk to me after you have two kids.
Okay, fair enough. Okay. Now we know for next year. By the way, do you have any parenting advice for me? Every day I hear the same word, the same question is asked of me. Hey, are you ready? Are you ready to be a father? Are you ready? And every day my response is the same. I have no idea if I'm ready. I feel no more or less ready than I did yesterday or a week ago or a month ago or 3 months ago. So I guess the answer is no. But is there anything that I should be super prepared for as a mom of two that you can impart to my wife and me?
Okay, listen, I would normally say a lack in sleep, but that doesn't really affect somebody like you at this juncture. Maybe a lack of more sleep.
Okay.
Okay. But, no, I can't get you ready. Only the baby itself will get you ready.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right.
Although I did not necessarily ask you that. I asked
you.
I
did, didn't, but a lot of other people.
But
have.
I asked you if you were excited. So
I am
technically
excited.
Technically, you
yes.
could get more excited.
Sure. Okay. But I'm saying
you can't get more ready.
I wasn't responding to your specific question. I do get that question quite a bit. Of are you ready? All right. Now, quite a bit I want to go over with you, but you have sort of made your. A lot of people over the course of the last year have taken note of you as the anti-COVID mandate girl, COVID vaccine mandate person. Mm-hmm. You were very vocal testifying before your local school board about mask mandates. And I think a lot of the audience kind of resonates with you and your reasons for opposing mask mandates, vaccine mandates, and so forth. Governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, a lot of people think he's going to be a presidential candidate come 2024, comes out yesterday and announces a prohibition on businesses instituting a vaccine mandate. How did you feel about that?
Well, I mean, I was envious of the people of Florida because as I live in the state of New Jersey, I'm just ready for, I'm actually not ready, like you. I am not ready for Governor Murphy to drop the hammer of mandates the way you are not ready for fatherhood or...
Right, I'm as ready as I was 8 months ago.
I actually am less ready for the mandates, maybe. Who knows? And that's very unready.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Fair enough.
So, but no, but as far as, so that's, I think it's great that he's very bold, but I found it hilarious that he had a press conference about this in front of Brandon dealership in Brandon, Florida.
So you don't think this was a coincidence?
No, with the word Brandon hanging behind him.
You know, isn't that a little low rent for a governor of a state to kind of resort to scheduling press conferences in a place just so it can be a social media meme?
No, I mean, nothing is lowbrow these days.
Fair enough.
If you said this to me maybe 4 years ago, I'd say maybe you're right. But then in walks Donald Trump and nothing can be lowbrow compared to some of the things that happened in 2016.
On the issue of these vaccine mandates, though, I completely agree that cities, states shouldn't be instituting these mandates. But if a private business wants to implement a vaccine mandate, why should a governor or the government be able to prohibit a private business from implementing whatever kind of rules they want for their business?
Well, okay, you know what? I actually, oh God, I can't even believe I'm saying this. I kind of agree with you
okay.
a little bit because, I mean, if you are, I mean, the whole idea of free enterprise is that you're supposed to be able
right,
to
exactly.
run your business
it's supposed to be free.
Without government involvement. The problem right now is that there's been so much government overreach in the other direction that he's just trying to rail against this because it's just he's trying to do the opposite and he's obviously making a case for himself for 2024. You know, I'd rather a government overreach in this way than the other direction.
Understood. Well, fair enough. Now, talking about consuming the news, which you and I have both done for a long time, I would say probably a lifetime. A lot of times people look through social media for the news. How would you characterize how many of them look through social media to determine what's in the news?
I don't even necessarily think that I'm the one characterizing. There's actually that term doom scrolling, right?
Doom scrolling. What's doom scrolling?
Yeah, doom scrolling is people who basically scroll through their social media feeds and looking for bad news. It's like nowadays, you know... This is, again, nothing new, and I always talk about Bill Maher, but he talked about this for years before all of this. just that how people love tragedy porn, right? So they just anything that's why all the news is bad all the time. Nobody wants to hear a feel good story. They just want to hear it in the midst of like 10 bad stories, maybe. So, doom scrolling is now the new thing where people are doing the same thing, except they're doing it with their thumb, I guess, before they were just watching TV. Look, just looking for bad news. And nowadays, with the how everything is so polarized, people are just looking to be angry all the time.
Why? Why are people looking to be so angry?
Because everybody thinks they're right. There has been such a divide when it comes to the mandates and everything else that we were talking about. It's like they just need to find something to justify their end of the story or something else where they can prove like their decisions are the right decisions.
A lot of the folks that found President Trump lacking in his COVID response looked to another world leader as a model of what the proper COVID response should have been. That world leader was the Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand. Now, New Zealand is making news for another reason, because apparently there has been a very large potato found in New Zealand. Now, you think of New Zealand, I think of mussels, you think of places that are in a very different time zone, but I don't necessarily think of potatoes. What's happening with this potato in New Zealand?
First of all, don't get ahead of yourself, Frank. Okay, these stories that we're about to go over, you have to tell the audience, right? So this is the anti-doom scrolling section of the show. Am I right?
That's correct, yes.
This is to all the people who really want bad news. You might as well
tune out.
Go get a
this
snack.
Is good news only.
This is good news. This is news you skipped over or scrolled over because it just was...
In search of a tragedy, you weren't listening to this.
Exactly. And I'm calling this too bad, it's not sad. Okay, so yes, it's the potato the size of a small dog that was found in New Zealand, and this couple who gardens and has cucumbers and planted other produce, never planted anything to grow potatoes, but somehow they stumbled upon this potato that is the size of a dog. They named it Doug, and it became a little bit of like a local celebrity, and they started taking the potato around in its own little truck or like cart or whatever, and I think the potato also had a social media page.
Oh boy.
Yeah, really made its way around this town. So I just think it's funny because you can't get mad at this story, and you almost have to feel sorry for the people of this section of New Zealand because it sounds like they could use an uptick in entertainment.
I would say so. Now, this is good news, at least for one Maryland man. I'm a gambler, so I appreciate the story very much. What happened in Maryland?
I'm fascinated by this because this is the second time I've read a story where someone won a large amount on a scratch-off ticket two times on two separate tickets. So this man, he's a retired utility worker in Maryland, and he won $2 million scratch-off ticket, and then a couple years later did it again.
Wow.
Yes.
Now, the thing that I'm amazed by is not even that he won twice, is that after winning, he kept playing. Because if I won $1 million or some substantial scratch-off portion, I think, okay, that was my turn. My ticket's been punched. This guy kept playing.
Well, if you're someone who likes gambling,
That's true.
As you know.
That's true.
Right. So would you stop going to Atlantic City
no.
if you won $2 million?
No. You know, well, I like the game itself. I like the...
Well, he might like scratching off tickets. Yeah. You know? And the irony, though, in this case, is that his second scratch-off ticket that he won, the title of the ticket was $2 million richer.
Oh, wow.
I mean,
okay. That is an irony. Congratulations to him.
Whatever his name is.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody lucky listener.
I would
listener.
Like to actually forget his name. So, okay, maybe this might incite a little anger, but more jealousy than anything else.
Envy, right? Sure. Now, my wife has been her whole life very critical and very fearful of spiders. In fact, when she was a little girl, she named spiders Franks, and she still calls spiders Franks. Lo and behold, she ended up marrying a Frank, even though that's the object of her disdain and fear. I'm sure Freud would have a field day with that. But it appears that my wife has a great deal more in common with spiders than even she probably realized. What's going on here?
Right, because the title of this next story is... spiders can have arachnophobia. So she could be friends with other spiders in this case. But anyway, so I guess a group of researchers found out, or one particular researcher found out, I would really not like this woman's job, that after studying those jumping spiders, I don't know if you've ever encountered these
Are they
things.
Spider crickets? Is that what those are?
I think that's maybe what you're calling them, and what like, people can picture. They're all picturing the same thing, but she called it a jumping spider. Ew. She said, and I don't know how long you have to observe a jumping spider to know that they instinctually will avoid their predator without ever encountering said predator, okay? And as much as this finding is interesting and who cares all at the same time, I don't think these spiders have anything on us women, because we too can avoid predators.
Right, you can jump just as easily as one of these jumping spiders away from the spider.
Without ever encountering said predator.
That's interesting.
Yes.
That's interesting.
We instinctually have the same personality traits.
Are you an Oreo fan? I know you're a Halloween fan, and you've made clear that your treat of choice was the hot tamale. But I don't.
Not for Halloween, just in general.
Right,
but yes.
We've never discussed Oreos.
No, Frank, and I think it's about time we do discuss Oreos, especially these particular Oreos, in this next story entitled Rare Pokemon Oreos Selling for Thousands of Dollars on eBay. Now, if that doesn't scream inflation, I don't know what does.
Those are people that should be buying gold, not Oreos. All right, so why would a box of Oreos or a container of Oreos, I'm not sure of the size, sell for thousands of dollars just because they're Pokemon themed?
Well, you missed the first word, which was rare.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So this is interesting to me only because my older daughter keeps asking for rare Pokemon cards. And not being a Pokemon connoisseur, I'm like, I don't really know what that means. So if you go online and you type in rare Pokemon cards, you'll automatically be redirected to Amazon, who will label everything rare Pokemon cards. And then I go, and okay, it says rare. So I pick this stack of cards, and she goes through them, and she's like, oh, thank you, but none of these are rare. I'm like, I don't even know what they are. I thought they were the one that had the hologram on them. I have no idea. But apparently, if you have one, not just forget these Oreos, which I don't even know why you would want Oreo cookies if you could get a rare card.
Right.
But if you have a rare card, you can go on eBay and sell them for, you know, $500 to $1,000 or something. I don't get it. I don't really understand it. It's like a baseball card thing. I never understood baseball cards. I don't understand
baseball
this.
Baseball cards, at least they're somewhat durable. You put them in a nice case. You display them. You have them. You collect them.
But can't
you
put a Pokemon card in a case?
But can you put a Pokemon Oreo in that kind of a?
You could put it in the freezer.
It seems like a waste of freezer space. But who am I to judge? Lastly, on the good news front, Ripley's. As in the Believe It or Not, folks. They are attempting a world record for the largest ball of hair. My cat, my stepcat, Melchizedek, is listening anxiously and quite jealously. What exactly are the Ripley's folks doing?
They're collecting hair from Ripley's fans.
Oh boy.
And they are creating a ginormous ball of hair. This actually grossed me out a lot. I don't like... even my own hair in the shower, like I have to clean out hair. Hair is not like it's not enticing. So I don't know why anybody would want to then go to an amusement park and look at the, 2021 expo, expo of a hairball. It's so disgusting. But anyway, this hairball is going to be, or is already, 167 pounds, something like that. I mean, how many people do you have to collect hair from?
What is the record? Do we know? I mean, 167 pounds, I would think, of hair.
Can you get Ripley on the phone?
She's doing Alien 4. I don't know that she's available. But, I mean, that's a lot of hair, 167 pounds.
Oh, wait. I think it says here that the, I think it's 100 pounds was the last one in 2019.
Oh, so they've already broken the record.
It looks like, oh, no, there's a current record of 167 pounds. Oh, I see. Nope, they're not there yet.
What are they at now? Do we know? I feel like you're not as prepared for this Ripley's hairball discussion.
You know, I'm not a Ripley's expert.
Fair enough.
I was more enticed by the fact that anybody would want to see a hairball. But there is another story, Frank, that came out recently that people missed.
Tell me.
And it is Radio host Frank Morano is having a baby in 3 weeks.
Oh, my.
I was like, wow, that is stranger than fiction. There's no way that I thought I was reading The Onion, and I couldn't believe that that was even a real story.
Can you stick around? You cool to stick around for a few minutes?
I will.
All right, good. All right, Marlena Shivo is here. Anything can happen when Marlena Shivo is here, and especially the Frank Morano and Marlena Shivo combination. More Lena Shivo is, I mean, it's anything can happen, especially when we're on This Little Sleep. Well, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. This is Ray Parker Jr., the theme to Ghostbusters. I'm a big fan of Ghostbusters. I even like Ghostbusters 2. The remake I did not like as much. And Marlena Shivo is here. She is a satirist, a veteran media producer, and a social critic. She is really an interesting person and a fascinating person who has been very critical of Dr. Anthony Fauci and his handling of the COVID pandemic. Now, a lot of people, including Senator Rand Paul, have been critical of Anthony Fauci for being somewhat dishonest before Congress when he talked about funding gain-of-function research. Now, a lot of people think it's not the best idea in the world to create these incurable diseases just to find out if we could cure them. And now it appears that smallpox is rearing its ugly head, at least at one Merck lab in a suburban Philadelphia facility. Marlena, what's going on with these smallpox vials?
Well, let's back it up 2 weeks. Okay. So Bill Gates comes out and says he has this warning of smallpox terror attacks, and he is seeking new research. So this is a headline a couple weeks ago. Many outlets carried it. And then here we are 2 days ago. There are vials of smallpox found in a lab in suburban Philadelphia, like you said. And there really haven't been any more details about it. It was just sort of like, yeah, there was a worker there who was cleaning out the refrigerator and stumbled upon these vials of smallpox, which later, and they said details to follow, and the FBI was investigating. So I checked up on the story a bunch. I wanted to see what these details were, and there really weren't. There wasn't much more to say. They haven't said much more about it. But the only thing their concern was not that it was that anyone was exposed. They said it was more of a security issue within the lab. I'm like, that is so.
You sound skeptical.
Well, that's where this is. OK, I'm going to ask your opinion.
Please.
Doesn't it sound a little odd to you?
It sounds incredibly strange.
Okay. And you're not placating
No.
me. Okay. So I put this up on social media because I'm like, is anybody paying attention to the narrative? Like, are we following the bouncing ball? Is this a coincidence? I'm open to many interpretations. However, I put it up 2 weeks ago, this. Today, it's this. And that's all I said. I said nothing more. And I get one comment from one girl, and she said, crazy. The part that struck me in this article was how the vaccine cured all of us of the virus. Like, that was her very underhanded, not so underhanded way of being like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But guess what? Vaccines cure people. First of all, no, they don't. They're not a cure. They're a mitigation
tactic. Right, it's a prophylactic.
Yeah, there you go. If that at all. So it's like you are missing the point altogether. You just want to skip to the fact that I have issues with the current mandates of the COVID vaccine.
Smallpox convenient relocation.
Correct. So it's like, this is just another symptom of what's going on, right? They just want to, people are cherry picking what they want to hear, what they want to see when it comes to this stuff. You could turn around and say, I'm cherry picking, but I feel like my picking is a little bit more accurate only because it's in ink. These are not dark websites. I mean, right. These are on major media outlets, these stories, and they're 2 weeks apart. I don't know. I'm speechless, actually. I don't know how. I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall when it comes to making these connections because everyone wants to call you a conspiracy theorist. Mm. And I'm like, this just happened. This is actually happening, but nobody cares.
So take us down the – let's say we do want to indulge the conspiracy theory side of our psyche. Take us down the rabbit hole here. What would a – not saying you're saying this, but hypothetically, what might a conspiracy theorist think about the nexus of these two stories, the Bill Gates aspect and then this Philadelphia smallpox aspect?
Well, if you – you know – I'm sure you've heard people say, you know, 2 weeks to flatten the curve, and here we are, you know, right. Almost 2 years later, and it's, I mean, and in every step of the way, they just keep moving the goalpost, right? I mean, the goalpost is so far at this point that it's out of sight, right? It's like, you know, oh, no, passports aren't going to come here. They're here. They're here in certain places. And I feel like, you know, New York and L.A. are the test pilots for this, and it's working, apparently, because people are going along with it, because people just want to go out and live their lives. Which I don't agree with at all. That's why I don't agree with any impending mandates from Governor Murphy in New Jersey. It's like, I'm not going to go along with it because everybody's just like, well, let's just do this and we'll get back to normal. Mm-hmm. Let's just do this and we'll get back to normal. You keep doing things and there is no getting back to anything that you think is normal. So, you know, so then a skeptic like me says, okay, well, they just want to prolong this, right? Well, people are getting really, like, tired of this narrative, even though 50% of the country thinks that the other 50% are conspiracy theorists. And now you have this guy, Bill Gates, at the center of all this, the philanthropist, the vaccine expert, coming out and talking about the next pandemic preparedness. I've never heard the word pandemic so much in my entire life. I've never talked about Bill Gates so much in my entire life. And here he is talking about a very specific pandemic, smallpox disease, whatever, deadly disease that was eradicated. And then 2 weeks later, that exact disease is found in a refrigerator.
Very interesting. I'd be curious if listeners have a thought, if they think this is odd, that Bill Gates is talking about smallpox and all of a sudden vials marked with smallpox are, found in Pennsylvania, in this research facility. 800-848-9222. Now, I know CNN yesterday did say that these vials that were marked with smallpox contained virus used in the vaccine, not the smallpox virus. So take it for what you will. But I agree with you. It is pretty suspicious that here we are talking about smallpox and then some vials in a research facility labeled smallpox get discovered in this lab freezer. It does strike me as a little odd.
Well, you know what? It wouldn't have struck – well, it would have still struck me because of the matching of the word smallpox, right? So then – but I'm not someone who just reads a headline and moves on. I read it and I'm thinking to myself, this could be taken another way, in another direction. Which is just that someone who is suspicious of maybe Bill Gates or all of this would go searching for something like this and discover it. The only thing that bothered me was that they kept saying unapproved vials. Mm-hmm. That's why the FBI mm-hmm. was involved. So that one word struck me as like, okay, wait, these aren't actually supposed to be here, are they?
Yeah,
who knows? Because there's no further details, Frank.
Very odd. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. A lot of people, you'll be happy to know, Marlena, are agreeing with you that I had no right to expect you or any of my other friends to bake Rita Cosby a cake or cupcakes or any sort of a baked good, and that's something that I should have done on my own. So once again, you appear to be with the Vox Populi. Before we run out of time here, you have, from time to time when you've been here, done some answering of open letters. And you've discovered at least one open letter, which is pretty interesting. What is the open letter you have for us today?
You know, I was going to make a joke about this, but now I'm feeling like I might not be able to. But so we're going to hold off on
answering this
one.
All right, well,
hold
up. You'll have to come back next week. Yes. Maybe we'll do Marlena Monday. 800-848-WABC. Joe is in Orange County. Joe, you're on with Marlena Shivo. Hello.
How you doing, Frank? Listen, Bill Gates is part of the problem. These pharmaceutical companies are making billions of dollars off of this epidemic, okay? And they want to continue to make money. So what are they going to do? We're going to have some more problems with epidemics and everything else that's going, you know. They're going to dream this stuff up. Besides that, I mean, what do you think? Am I wrong?
Well, look, I do find it very suspicious. I don't think, look, somebody as wealthy as Bill Gates, I don't think they're concocting viruses to get wealthy. I mean, I've heard some of the conspiracy theories that are out there, and they say, oh, Bill Gates is doing this so he can make all sorts of money. I think once you have as much money as Bill Gates has, I doubt you're creating viruses or creating vaccines or pushing vaccines just so that you can be wealthier. I don't buy into that. That being said, you know, I don't preclude Bill Gates or anybody else from having some sort of ulterior motive here.
It's hard to decipher because there's been such a mistrust of what's going on because from the beginning there was so much jumbled messaging around the current pandemic and the current vaccine, and then the ever-changing narrative of masks, no masks, get vaccinated, and you won't have to wear a mask. Oh, but you still have to wear a mask. You know, it's just so after a while, people get tired, they get suspicious, and then you have something like this happen, and it could be absolutely nothing. And I'm still open to thinking it's absolutely nothing, but I just find it so interesting. And odd and strange. I mean, do I think Bill Gates is out to get us? I think everyone's out to get us.
Talking with Marlena Shivo. So my wife and I are, well, mostly her, but she is sending me highlights of parenting articles, right? Yeah, you're a very successful parent of two young
women. How would you know?
Well, what do you mean? I don't know. I've met your children. They seem pretty well adjusted, and I don't know. They don't seem to me as if they're depressed or turning to drugs or anything.
Frank, that was more of like a demon.
All right, fair.
But go ahead.
So, the issue of pacifiers in infancy. Ooh. Rachel just sent me an article on that yesterday, and I was reading through it, and I thought it was interesting. And apparently, the primary reason the parents use pacifiers, for instance, is to pacify them, calm them down, have them cry a little bit less. What's been your experience with your two girls in terms of pacifiers?
Oh,
if any?
Both of my kids had pacifiers. They just did. You know, people bought me pacifiers for the shower. Uh-huh. And I was like, okay. So they actually used them in the hospital when I had my first baby. So I was like, okay, this is what you do. And then you wean them off them and that's it. And so it was hard to wean my first one off of her. So I swore up and down when I had my second, I wasn't going to do it. And then that didn't happen.
So you did it for the second as well.
Yeah, I did.
And you had no problem ultimately weaning both of them off.
I mean, they were very late weaners, but yes, they both are unpacified.
Wonderful. Right.
So why? What's the problem?
No problem. I'm just curious about different, you know, pacifier strategies.
You
that
know,
people
the
thing,
there's no problem with it. You know, it's soothing for them. You know, but, you know, some experts might argue that kids have to learn how to self-soothe.
I see.
But I also feel like, you know, babies aren't that advanced and, right. You know, they can have this. The issue with pacifiers for me is the dental part of it. At a certain age, if you don't, you have to get your child off of the binky somewhere in the threes is the latest, because otherwise it'll affect their palate.
So if you use it before their teeth fully come in, it's okay in your view, mm-hmm. and I guess the view of dentists, mm-hmm. but you don't want to wait too long. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Carol in New Jersey. Carol, you're on with Marlena Shivo. Hello.
Hi there, Frank and Marlena.
Hi.
It figures that Bill Gates, of all people, would find vials of smallpox, which I thought was an eradicated disease, at some lab in Pennsylvania.
Well, he didn't actually find it, right? So, again, clarify the timeline for us here, Marlene.
Oh,
he talked about it, and then it was found elsewhere, right?
Correct.
He had nothing to do with the finding of the smallpox.
Right. He actually talked about the threat of smallpox and asking for more research funds for just future pandemic preparedness. And that was a story that came out a couple weeks ago. And then 2 days ago, a lab worker was cleaning a Merck lab in the suburban Philadelphia area and stumbled upon some vials of smallpox. Or the virus used in the smallpox vaccine, as you clarified, Frank.
Well, as CNN is reporting. Who knows? Again, these stories go, they get reported and this and that. All right, talking with Marlene Schiavo. You can follow her on Facebook, Twitter, all forms of social media, at Marlene Schiavo. And what are you doing this weekend? Anything exciting planned? I hear we're in for some rough weather. What does a parent of two do when there's rough weather and you're stuck indoors with your husband and children?
First of all, the term stuck indoors is not a good launching pad for a father to be.
Got it. All right, see, this is why I have you here, to learn.
Well, now I'm going to give some birthday parties, and also it's almost Thanksgiving, so I'm thinking I'm going to put up the Christmas tree.
Are you? Okay, so I don't like to put up Christmas decorations until after Thanksgiving.
Oh.
But Rachel asked to have an exception. She didn't really ask. She demanded that we make an exception to our normal tradition because in case she's in labor around Thanksgiving, she wants this Christmas stuff up and she's concerned we might not be able to put it up if we don't do
it. I consider Thanksgiving weekend the launch of the Christmas season, as most do, as Santa Claus is in the parade. But I feel like what's a few days before Thanksgiving?
Yeah. No, it's true. It's true. All right. Well, Marlene Schiavo, follow her on all forms of social media. This has been fun.
It's been mediocre.
Well, hey, I mean, don't sell yourself short. I think you're more than
mediocre. Oh, I was
selling
you short.
I'm always short. I look
You've
up
never
at
been
these,
accused of being tall.
That's
I
right.
Know.
That's right. Yeah. I'm still waiting. My dad is 6'2". I'm still waiting for my growth spurt. Doesn't appear to be coming. All right.
Well, Benjamin Button, you just wait. Your time is coming.
I certainly hope so. All right. Coming up next hour, Debbie Schlussel is going to be here. We're going to talk about movies. And see, Debbie's such an interesting person. She always finds a political angle to all these movies. You watch these movies, and I had no idea any of these films were about politics. Debbie somehow manages to find a political angle to these films. I can't understand it. If you want to weigh in on anything we're doing on social media, you could follow me on Twitter at Frank Morano. That's Frank, M-O-R-A-N-O. Or you could find me on Facebook at facebook.com/MoranoFan. We have a Facebook group, too. And there's a couple of, like, there's two or three virulent Marlena, anti-Marlena people that dominate the Facebook group. So if you're a pro-Marlena person, join the Facebook group and you can make your voice heard as well. Just search, go to facebook.com/groups/Radio Morano, and we could put forward a pro-Marlena message, even though she did call me mediocre and short. So if you're one of the anti-Marlena people, I guess more power to you. Until next hour, 800-848-9222. I will take your calls next. Debbie Schlussel will be here. Until next hour, the words of the great Bob Grant, your influence counts, so make sure you use it. This is The Other Side of Midnight. We'll continue straight ahead.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. Now, here's Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. You know, I have to confess, I'm not a Starbucks person. I know a lot of people like Starbucks. They like the whole Starbucks culture. It's not for me. My dad is a Starbucks person, And some of my best friends are Starbucks people. I don't judge anybody that's a Starbucks person. You like Starbucks? Go. Enjoy Starbucks. And there have been, from time to time, when you're walking around, I do a lot of walking in Manhattan. That is my primary mode of transportation within the borough of Manhattan. I walk around, walk around, walk around. And sometimes, once in a while, you need to use the restroom. And the one thing that's great about Starbucks is that they will allow anybody to use the bathroom, irrespective of whether or not you're purchasing something. So I did find this story pretty interesting, and I'm curious what you think of this. Starbucks has teamed up with Amazon to deliver a new store to the consumers here in New York City without any cashiers. The new Starbucks pickup, which is located at 59th Street between Park and Lexington, is opened today, actually, yesterday, technically. The retail experience uses the order ahead feature on the Starbucks app and Amazon Go's just walk out technology to create a touchless experience. So the team up is part of the ongoing COVID era trend to leverage technology in the consumer experience. And I'm curious if you would ever do something like this. Now, it's very COVID friendly because they leverage technology in lieu of human contact to expedite requests and reduce the chances of catching COVID. When I'm at the grocery store, when I'm at the drugstore and they have the option for the cashless register, I never use it. Never use it, not because I can't figure out how to use it, although, truth be told, there are times when some of these machines are a little bit more complicated than I'd like. But I don't use it because I don't want to cost someone their job. And if everybody is using the cashless lanes and the cashless registers, what do they need cashiers for? I like humans. I like humans in these stores. I like to be able to ask them questions. I like to be able to make a 30 seconds worth of small talk with them. But if you're super concerned about COVID and you want to avoid human contact, is this ever the kind of thing that you would think about using? Give me a call and let me know. 800-848-9222. That's 1-800-848-WABC. Because as much as I don't use these cashless registers, there are times when I'm not in the mood for small talk. There'll be times when I'll take an Uber, for instance, and the driver wants to talk to me. And I just want to sit there and sleep. Or I want to sit there and make a phone call or answer some emails on my phone. And there have been times where I think to myself, wouldn't it be nice if this was a self-driving Uber and I didn't have a person here to entertain? And I'm wondering if people have that experience at times with the whole Starbucks situation. So I do think that if this store catches on here in New York City, that you're going to see these pop up all over the country. And I'm curious what you think about this. Would you go to one of these stores, a coffee shop with no cashiers, a cashierless coffee shop? 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. And as Marlena reminded me, next Thursday, or this a week from yesterday, is Thanksgiving. And so I saw a very interesting article that I have to confess I never thought about, but now I've only been able to think about it since I read it yesterday. There is a huge cranberry sauce debate. And when you think about cranberry sauce, you know, cranberry sauce is something you really only have with, turkey and the like, I guess. But Axios has an article about the cranberry sauce, the great cranberry sauce debate, determining whether people use canned or fresh cranberry sauce. And lo and behold, the vast majority of the country, and this goes blue states, red states, rural states, urban states, the vast majority of the country uses fresh cranberry sauce. Now, this is according to data from Instacart orders during the last year, in terms of which states prefer fresh cranberry sauce. You got California, you've got Texas, you've got Oklahoma, you've got Washington, you've got Montana. These are all fresh cranberry sauce states. The states that prefer canned cranberry sauce, you have New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, pretty much the whole Northeast. And then you have Florida, Georgia, South Carolina. So very interesting to me, the states that are picking fresh cranberry sauce versus canned cranberry sauce. So I'd love to hear your analysis of that as well. So question one is, would you go to one of these cashierless coffee shops? 800-848-WABC. Question two is, are you fresh cranberry sauce or canned cranberry sauce, and why? 800-848-WABC. Weigh in on either or both of those subjects. We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 open lines, so you can get right on if you want to comment on either of those. Now, today's a big day for me, because coming up in a mere 5 hours and 30 minutes, I, your humble correspondent, will be matching wits with the smartest man in New York, Bernard McGuirk. Bernard McGuirk every day does the Beat Bernie contest, and he matches wits with, usually it's a caller, today it'll be a colleague, and you have to see which, whether it's Bernie or somebody else, that can answer, do better in terms of answering five questions. I was spanked by Bernie the last time we played. Today, I have an opportunity to have my vengeance, and I am going to get my rematch. Now, if I lose again, then forget about it. I am retiring. I'm done. But I'm hoping that I can, you know, that I can undo my embarrassment of the previous occasion. I'm going to try and sleep before this Beat Bernie, so I'm well rested, and I'm sticking around here. I'm not going home or anything. I'm going to be around here, and I'm going to play Beat Bernie at 9:40. So please be sure to listen to that. 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-9222. Patrick is in Huntington. Hello, Patrick.
Good morning, Frank. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning.
I heard you mention you didn't want to have somebody lose their job by using these automated lines. And I had a conversation with a friend the other day. And how about the people who leave the shopping carts in the parking lot instead of walking them up back to the front of the building, or even so, putting them in their little corrals, you know, those stables they have? Do you feel you're keeping someone's job by not doing that?
Well, it's a good question. I have to confess, I've never thought about that, but that just strikes me as lazy. But here's what, and again, I haven't thought about this, so I don't have a well-reasoned, well-thought-out response. Here's where I think it's different. The people that pick up those errant shopping carts that are left in the parking lot that have to then wheel them back, those are people that do other things at the grocery store. The cashiers are just cashiers. They're not doing other things, as far as I know.
Well, I think you got to think about that. They spend a lot of time clearing those carts.
Well, that's true. So I guess your view is, aside from pointing out my own hypocrisy, which, believe me, I have hypocrisy in abundance, your view is that maybe there's nothing wrong with using the automated cashiers.
Yeah, I think it's a convenience, actually. I don't, you know, for the same people who say, you know, they don't want to close someone their jobs, what are they doing with the shopping cart? They, you know, when they turn around and they're just lazy, but they'll say they're trying to keep someone's job.
Well, that's fair, Patrick. Thank you. 800-848-WABC. 8 open lines if you want to jump on board. 1-800-848-9222. Let me say hello to Connor in Morristown. Hello, Connor.
Hey, how you doing, Frank?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks, Connor.
Good, good. I'm just calling to talk about the cranberry debate.
Yeah, where do you fall on this? Now, you are from a state which is very, very heavily pro canned cranberry sauce. Is that where you are?
Yes, sir.
How come?
I don't really know, and I have a take on the cranberry sauce debate that's maybe unpopular.
Oh boy, let me hear this.
I think it's very overrated. I've never been a cranberry sauce guy, and coming from New Jersey, again, it may be unpopular, but I just can't fall in line with it. I don't throw it on any of my Thanksgiving stuff on Thanksgiving Day. Isn't that weird?
Well, no, I don't. You know, I'll be honest, Connor, and you think your comment is unpopular. This is going to be unpopular. And I usually save this commentary for 6 days from now. But since it's just you and me here, I'll share it now. I believe, except in Italian households, which does Thanksgiving meals very differently, the basic Thanksgiving American meal is largely a collection of foods that you would never, ever have anytime ever. You would never go to a restaurant and order turkey. You would never say, oh, give me the dark meat. Give me the white meat. Oh, what's with that turkey? Oh, give me some turnips. Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, turnip. I mean, this is Thanksgiving food, and I like Thanksgiving. I like that you don't have to get gifts.
I love it, especially with family and everything.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. It's great to connect with family. It's great to, you know, see people that you don't necessarily always get to see. It's fun. There's football on. Yeah. You don't have to get gifts for everybody. But I am convinced that Thanksgiving was invented by the Pilgrims and the American Indians largely as an opportunity to get rid of food that nobody would ever eat 364 other days of the year.
I could not agree more. That's actually so funny you say that, yeah.
Connor, well, thank you for the call. I appreciate you weighing in on the great cranberry sauce debate. I hope you have a nice Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Frank. Happy Thanksgiving. Be well.
Appreciate it. You too. So Ellen emails me. She says, no, they have dedicated people to round up the carts. So I guess maybe the caller, Patrick, is right. Maybe I should leave the carts there in the parking lot to save these people's jobs as well. You know, my Uncle Joe, I used to work for my uncle in a shoe repair shop, and it was one of my first jobs. I think it was my first job. And so he'd drive me home. Obviously, I was a teenager. I couldn't drive. So he would drive me home, and I'd see him throw garbage out the window of his car. He'd throw a wrapper or whatever. And I'd say, you know, Uncle Joe, what are you doing? You can't throw, you know, garbage out of your car like that. And he said, he was at that point retired sanitation, still is. And he said, nope, you got to do something to keep those sanitation guys working. The sanitation guys clean up all the garbage, so I have to throw it out the window. Which was a very creative excuse, I thought, in terms of that. So, but maybe Patrick's right. Maybe if I'm so concerned with the job prospects of people at grocery stores, maybe I need to be leaving these shopping carts in the parking lot and not bringing them back. But just getting back to this Thanksgiving food situation, again, Italian households are different because you got the manigot, and it's just you got the cold antipasto. You got a pasta course. It's just wonderful. But then you take a basic American Thanksgiving, with the exception of maybe mashed potatoes. It's a collection of foods that you would never order in a million years. You'd never go to a restaurant and say, what are the specials? The waiter says, oh, yes, today we have some delightful green bean casserole. You're never going to order green bean casserole or turnips or even turkey. Who's ordering turkey? Nobody. So 800-848-WABC. Jeffrey is in Queens. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello, Frank. How are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there. Thanks, Jeffrey.
You know, you're right. Green bean casserole, I agree with you 100%. But I think we'll part company. Okay, even turkey. I think now that people have learned how to make poultry more moist, that you would, I don't know, maybe you would get in a restaurant, maybe not. But I'll say this, my mom in the 70s, at some point, my parents, mom, started making turkey more than once a year. It became a regular, like once a month. You know, it was a regular thing in the diet for about 10 years there, and I mean, come on, potatoes. We'll mash.
Well, that's true. Mashed potatoes. That's true. That's a year round staple.
What about walnut pie? What's it called? I'm missing the word.
Well, I see how often you're ordering it, Jeffrey, that you don't even remember what it's called.
No, we didn't make that often, but that's almost a delicacy. in fact, let me tell you the other day, if I may revisit a topic, the dental topic, may I touch on that for a second?
Yes. Remind me what the dental topic was. Remind our listeners, I should say. I, of course, remember.
You say how the pleasure you received when you would rinse your mouth after the dentist cleaning your teeth.
Love it. Absolutely.
And I wanted to add a certain angle to that also. It was the pleasure, the supreme pleasure, when your tongue was able to run over your teeth and you'd feel all the gap, all the areas that had been smoothed over with plaque.
Right. Well,
you could feel your teeth.
Now that I hear you reiterate what I actually said, I'm beginning to think all the listeners that complained that I was pretty disgusting in describing this were right. But yes, you're exactly right, Jeffrey.
Stop. Thanks, Frank.
But what did you want to say on the dentist front? Anything?
No, I said it. No.
Oh,
you
okay.
You didn't touch on it. You just said you.
Oh, I didn't say it. Well, because I thought that I said that because I believe that very strongly. I mean, it's a very satisfying feeling is that you had this plaque or even tartar. It'd been 2 years since I had a cleaning.
Right.
And then after they do all their stuff, you rinse out, spit out this messy liquid of bloody discharge.
Oh, that's the part that's gross,
right? And then you run your tongue along the inner side of your teeth, and
right.
you just feel gaps where there used to be tartar. There's something so satisfying there, Jeffrey.
If you said it, Frank, I might have missed it. I apologize. And on cranberries, you're right. First of all, if you got to have cranberries out of anything out of a can is insane, Frank, compared to fresh. Okay.
Fair enough, Jeffrey. Thank you very much. 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. Ron is in Norwalk, Connecticut. Hello, Ron.
Hi, Frank. Love your show.
Thank you.
But I wanted to disagree with you.
How dare
you? Turkey dinners are only served on Thanksgiving because if you go to a diner, That's one of the main staples on their menu, and I've had turkey throughout the year at diners.
And you order turkey throughout the year?
Yeah, they have open turkey sandwiches. They have
turkey sandwich is one thing, right? Turkey sandwich is one thing. But do you go about get, like, the dark meat versus the light meat? Do you go that whole route?
No, I don't care. I like dark meat. I prefer it. But you can order a turkey dinner with mashed potatoes, gravy, cranberries. It's all there. Any day of the week, any time of the year.
You know, and thank you for the call, Ron. Maybe that's true. Look, I'm being somewhat facetious. I'm kind of just joking around a little bit. But that's why diners are so great. You can walk in, and there are fewer and fewer diners, and this is one of the things that drives me crazy. I mean, 20 years ago, I think there were about 2,000 diners in New York, in New York City, the greater New York, the five boroughs. Now, I think there are fewer than 300, and I'll check those numbers, but I believe it's that level of declination. And the number of Jewish delicatessens also dramatically declined. But diners are amazing, especially a good 24-hour diner, which every diner is supposed to be. You go into any diner, and you can order a hamburger, you can order eggs, you can order a turkey sandwich, you can order a lobster tail, you can order eggplant parmesan. It comes out in 10 minutes, whatever you're ordering. It's delicious. Get it any time of night. I love diners. If they said to me, you can only have one type of cuisine for the rest of your life, only go to one type of restaurant for the rest of your life, hands down, I would pick diners. Absolutely. 800-848-WABC. Let me say hello to Gino in Connecticut. Hello, Gino.
Frank, good morning. How are you doing?
Making a living.
Good. Hey, listen, first of all, the cranberry thing. They're all terrible. I don't eat cranberry.
Of course they are. Of course they are. To my prior point, yes.
As far as the self-help, you know, the cash registers, the self-help on the registers, you know, everyone, you know, that's been saying, you know, I'm not that opposed to it. I think I wonder how they would feel if their job was taken away from them by automation. And almost every job can be taken away if people don't, you know, stop the self-help stuff. You know, at the restaurants now, they also have some restaurants where they have a little computer there, a little tablet, where you can do your own ordering and pay your bill.
I've seen that.
And all they do is have, yeah, where they just have runners that come out and just bring you food. I personally refuse to use them. And I tell them, you know, they tell me, no, we're still here. I tell them, I don't care. Either you take my order or we don't order.
Gino, I am with you, my brother. I am with you. I rue the day and I dread the day that they have an automated radio talk show host for your entertainment. As soon as they can figure out some, like a robot to just say 1-800-848-WABC and then tell you the story of how they lost their car keys and then explain to you why Barack Obama is a Kenyan communist, then that's it. We're all out of work at that point. 800-848-9222. Jack is in Tinton Falls. Hello, Jack.
Yeah, Frank, we just got some very good news on our end. My wife told us last night that we're going to cook our own Thanksgiving spread just to have on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Because what happens in our house, my wife's Italian, at around 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Thanksgiving, we go to her parents' house for a massive Italian spread, everything you've already described earlier. Everyone over there, she's got a lot of brothers and sisters. They all fight over the leftovers, you know, and we invariably we go home with not enough. So we're going to cook our own spread from the time we wake up to the time we leave so that we can have that on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for leftovers.
Well, I think that's a great idea, actually, Jack. That sounds like a lot of fun. You know, as I said, I love Thanksgiving, and especially in my family. And again, we usually do, I think I said this before, I've lost track of what I've lost. Do you ever do that? I mean, maybe you don't because you're not hosting a radio show on a regular basis, but I lose track of what I've said on the radio and what I say to people in real life. So I can't, forgive me if I said this already. But we usually go to my wife's mother for Thanksgiving, and she lives all the way out in 107.1 FM land. She lives all the way out in eastern Suffolk County in the Mastic section of Long Island. That's about a 2.5-hour drive on Thanksgiving. So obviously my wife could give birth on Thanksgiving. So rather than drive 2.5 hours and be 2.5 hours away from the hospital in which she's delivering our baby, she's giving birth to our baby, we wanted to stay close. So we're just going to my mom's, who lives 10 minutes away. And one of the situations in my family is there's so much pressure to eat when you're not hungry. There's 4, 5, 6, 7 courses. You get stuffed even. And my mother hates this because she does this on Christmas too, because she does Christmas Day. There's so much pressure to eat. Like by the time the main course comes, you're just overstuffed. You're almost in pain because you're so overstuffed. And I've tried to get my mom, give people a break, give people a breather. And then my mom will say, yes, I'm going to give people a breather. But she doesn't because she's so eager to get all this food out. I mean, I think like a lot of households, especially, again, a lot of households of Italian descent, if she's having 6, 7 people, she'll cook for 30 or 40. And that's why every year, and this was a lot of fun, and I discontinued the tradition maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. No, a little more. Maybe about 7 years ago. Because my mom would make so many different types of food, I would throw a Black Friday party consisting only of leftovers from Thanksgiving. And then I would invite all of my friends over, and I'd have 30, 40, 50, 60 people in her house for Black Friday. And it was a great party. It was a really wonderful party. People would get wild. It was great. And you know what? There still was a surplus of food, even after all these people consuming all those leftovers. 800-848-WABC. Stu is in Pennsylvania. Hello, Stu.
Hey, Frank. Well, your mom sounds like a wonderful lady.
Oh, she is world class. World class.
That's a lot of cooking.
You don't even want to know. But see, Stu, what she does, and she's probably listening. I don't want her to get upset with me. But she cooks like crazy, and then she also caters. She caters on top of everything she's cooking. I said, Mom, there's only three of us here. There's four of us. What are you doing? Why are you cooking and catering? Well, I know Rachel likes this. I know you like this. My brother likes this. So, yes. But what were you going to say there, Stu?
Well, my grandmother cooked, but it was only for maybe 10 people. But then she had to clean up, you know. So, I mean, the cook and then clean up, that's just, you know, the ladies ought to get a little credit for that.
Absolutely.
And they don't.
Absolutely.
You know? Well, anyway, I wanted to bring up bank books, savings account books, where most banks are doing away with savings account books and they're digitizing everything. And that's going to end up being another job loss where everything's digitized. You won't need tellers. And the concern about this is that if you ever end up with some type of electromagnetic pulse and it takes down the system, you are not going to have a savings account book from the bank that gives the time, date, teller, transaction. And I believe, and I don't know, maybe you can answer this, a savings account book is actually a legal document. And I brought this up to my sister, which worked in a courthouse, and she said, oh, you don't need a bank book. I got a registry. And I said, Lynn, anything can be written in a registry. That's your handwriting. That's ink. That's not the bank's digitized bank printout where it puts the transaction, puts the date, puts the teller, the time, everything in there. It's their machine. So if something would happen and you go into the bank, guess what? It's going to be like Potter in A Wonderful Life. He's going to say, what money are you talking about?
Your money's in Joe's house and there. That's true, Stu. That's a very real concern. I like the paper. I know a lot of people, they deposit their checks just by taking a photo of it on their phone. I like to bring the check to the bank, hand it to the teller. I go through all the rigmarole. I'm a dinosaur. What can I say? Hey, those of you that are holding, I will get to your calls a little bit later. We're going to talk with Debbie Schlussel in just a minute. But before we do, I want to give you an opportunity to win $1,000. Be the seventh caller to 1-800-848-WABC. That's 1-800-848-9222. And if you can answer 10 questions correctly in 60 seconds, you will be $1,000 richer as we play the $1,000 minute. Yesterday, we almost had a winner, made it up to question 9. I have gone out of my way to make these questions as easy as possible. I'm telling you. 800-848-9222. If you think you have what it takes to answer 10 questions in 60 seconds correctly, then call now. This is The Other Side of Midnight, straight ahead.
Start your morning with Frank Morano on 77 WABC.
Aerosmith. This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Moreno. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to talk movies with Debbie Schlussel. Always fiery, always interesting, always informative, always passionate about a variety of issues, whether they have to do with cinema or motion pictures. And we're going to benefit from her film reviews in just a minute. But for now, it's time for
The Other Side of Midnight presents
It's the $1,000 Minute. Answer 10 questions correctly in 1 minute, and you could win $1,000. Here's your host, Frank Morano.
Well, let's meet today's contestant, Chris in Jackson. Chris, you're in Jackson, New Jersey?
Yes, sir. Frank.
Wonderful. My cousin Kathy lives in Jackson. Do you ever run into her?
No, I just came out here to check out the eclipse. I actually live in Brick.
Oh, very nice. Okay. And how's the view of the eclipse out there?
It's pretty good. I don't know if you're familiar with Roma Farms, but it's like dark, nice little dark spot.
I'm not, but I am familiar. There's an Italian restaurant that everybody that goes to Jackson, because there's a lot of New Yorkers that end up moving to Jackson, they love this Italian restaurant named Solabella. So if you're... You've heard of it. So they open at 11:30. So if you're still there in 7 hours, check out Solabella and you know, let us know what you think of it. All right, Chris, are you familiar with this contest, this game?
Yes, sir.
All right, great. So we're going to start the timer as soon as I ask the first question. If you answer a question correctly, I'm just going to move on to the next one. If you answer a question incorrectly, then you'll hear a buzzer indicating that you got the answer wrong, and we'll try and run through these questions as soon as possible, okay?
Got it.
All right, ready to go?
Yes, sir.
Name a consonant.
North America.
Well, let me repeat the question. Consonant. C-O-N-S-O-N-A-N-T.
C.
Who is the current president of the United States?
Joe Biden.
What's the name of the volunteer crime-fighting group founded by Curtis Sliwa?
Guardian Angels.
What sport do the New York Jets play?
Football.
What is the legal drinking age in New York State?
21.
What is the name of the fairy in Peter Pan?
Tinkerbell.
What color are the stars on the American flag?
White.
Which ocean is off the California coast?
Pacific.
Which state is famous for Hollywood?
California.
Who was the first and only vice president to be sworn in outside the country? We'll let you answer.
That would be Lyndon Johnson.
Unfortunately not. You have done better, Chris, than just about anybody else. But the correct answer is William Rufus Duvaine King, the only vice president sworn in outside the country. He was sworn in Cuba. There was a special act of Congress to allow him to be sworn in Cuba. Grab Chris's information. We want to send him something special. Don't just send him a cap. We'll send him something really good because he did well. Grab his information. Now, somebody that would have gotten that question correct is attorney, film critic, conservative pundit, and all-around interesting person, Debbie Schlussel. Debbie, good morning. Thanks so much for joining me on the radio.
Good morning, and thanks. Quite an introduction, but I have to be honest, I was very impressed with Chris. I would not have gotten that answer right. I knew all the other answers. That one I did not know.
Well,
but he's very impressive. Cool.
Yeah, that wasn't bad. That wasn't bad. All right. Debbie, how are you, by the way? You doing well?
Doing great. Thank God.
Now, I want to talk movies with you because I'm eager to see this Ghostbusters movie, and I want to get your take on that. But this Rittenhouse trial, let me ask you to put on your legal analyst cap for a minute. We could see a verdict today. Any predictions on what's going to happen in this Rittenhouse trial based on what you've seen?
Well, based on what I've seen so far with the jury out this long, I really don't think they're going to make a decision. I predict that it's going to be a hung jury. The reason why I say that is, so we've now had, 3 days of deliberations on something that should be very cut and dried and easy to see was self-defense. And there's been a lot of noise that's completely irrelevant that's been brought up by the prosecutor. There have been some protests outside. And I believe that some of these jurors are afraid of riots, which there probably will be riots no matter what. But unfortunately, I think nowadays a lot of these juries are run by mob violence from the outside. So I think if they were going to make a decision one way or the other, they would have done so already. I think actually the judge should declare a mistrial or a hung jury already in a mistrial because they have yet to make a decision. They could only let the jury go for so long. And I just think that they are irreparably deadlocked.
Well, you may be right. We'll see what happens today. I can't imagine they're going to want to revisit this on Monday. So if there is a hung jury, I would imagine we're going to hear something today. It's going to be very interesting. Hey, Debbie, in spite of the fact that it's been 3 days since the jury's been out in the Rittenhouse trial, shocking everybody, at least shocking everybody in our audience, it's been, in the last 3 days, Alec Baldwin hasn't killed a single person, which comes as a surprise for a lot of people. Give me your take on this Alec Baldwin situation. As somebody that pays close attention to entertainment and the media and the law, what's your take on what occurred here?
I mean, I just think that anybody who is handling a gun, I'm not a gun expert, but I am a gun owner, And I know that in every gun class I've ever taken, from the very first one to the latest one, they always tell you a basic thing, which is that never point a gun at someone unless you intend to shoot and probably kill them. Number two is always look and see if there is ammunition in the gun for yourself. Don't trust anybody's word for it. And number three, even if you haven't looked, always assume that there is live ammunition. And, you know, when this first happened, I talked to a friend of mine that is a very sane Hollywood director person. And he said to me that Alec Baldwin did this on the cheap. He would have never done a lot of the things that happened in this on the set. And you always have plexiglass covering the cameras and shielding everybody else. And frankly, you know what? Alec Baldwin is the person, one of these people, just like George Clooney, who's now fighting with him over this.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. For people that don't know, George Clooney has ripped this Alec Baldwin shooting and said it's infuriating, it's insane. He said the star and the crew appeared to ignore decades-old safety rules used on every other set that George Clooney has ever been involved in. But go ahead, finish what you were going to say.
Yeah, well, so both of those guys are for gun control. They want to take away our guns while they live in gated communities and fancy penthouses. I think Alec Baldwin lives in a fancy apartment building with, you know, with a doorman and so on. Not everybody has that situation. A lot of us need to protect ourselves, and they want to take away our guns. In the one place where people should be legally allowed to have them to protect themselves under the Second Amendment. And yet one of the places where they absolutely don't need guns, and they can use technology in terms of sound, computer graphics, and so on, that's where they have to have the guns. So they want to take them away from you and me, but they want to have them on these sets, which they don't need them. It's absurd with today's technology that they even need them. So I think that they need to gun control Hollywood and let the rest of us do what we want to do and have our freedoms.
Now the script supervisor for this film, Rust, the one who called 911, is suing Alec Baldwin and others involved in the production. She's claiming that Alec Baldwin didn't even need to fire this gun in this scene, and she's represented by Gloria Allred, certainly somebody that can get a lot of attention for the cases that she's representing. Do you think, as an attorney, Debbie, that that she has a case here? Do you think Alec Baldwin and the producers of this film are going to end up paying some money?
I think they will pay money to a lot of people, but not to this client of Gloria Allred. Gloria Allred, as you pointed out, loves publicity. She likes to make noise. But most of these cases that you hear about involving something like this, she's just piling on and trying to get publicity. I don't know how the script supervisor has any kind of standing. The only damages that she could show, which she would have to show to get anything, would be maybe some kind of harm to her reputation or some kind of payment that she didn't get. And I don't know that she could show something like that. But I do think that there is one interesting point raised, which is that she said that there's nothing in the script that involved shooting anybody. So there was no reason to practice shooting anybody or shooting the gun, which that I think is an important key point that some of the other people suing Alec Baldwin can use. And I think that Alec Baldwin's seven children are going to be fighting over very little left when he's gone, because by the time all these people are finished with him, I don't know what's going to be left. And I think the one thing he may have shot is and killed is his career.
Interesting.
In addition to Lena Hutchins.
Very interesting. But if people are listening and they see Alec Baldwin on the streets of New York, be very, very careful, because, look, he's already killed at least one person. Debbie Schlossel is here. She is an attorney, a political commentator, a film critic, and we take advantage of her film opinions from time to time. Debbie, I am a big fan of the Ghostbusters franchise. The new film, Ghostbusters Afterlife, is out. You've seen it. Is it worth seeing?
Yes, I thought it was much better than I expected. I liked it a heck of a lot better than the one involving the women, which I thought was absolute garbage. The last one they had with Melissa McCarthy.
Weak, yep.
Yeah, very weak. This was very cute. It involves these kids that are actually the grandchildren of the one actor that has died.
Right, Harold Ramis.
Exactly. So, and thank you for reminding me of his name. I had brain lock there for a second. What happens is they and their mother get evicted from their apartment, and their grandfather that they have been estranged from has died and left them his very rickety house and his farm that doesn't grow anything. And so they go out to the country to this place, and they discover that, in fact, he was a Ghostbuster. And it's just a very cute movie. I liked it. It was a little slow, a little long. Paul Rudd is in it. And at the beginning of the movie, when we saw the screening, the person who directed it said, oh, don't give away any spoilers. Don't tell people what happens in the last scenes. But I've seen all over TV that the three surviving ghosts...
Don't give a spoiler away, Debbie.
All right, I won't give it away, but I'll just say that certain people have been making the rounds of late night TV shows telling what happens, and I was kind of surprised by that. They kind of spoiled it.
Interesting.
But I did enjoy it.
It's worth seeing.
It's worth seeing. It's just a little slow moving, but I enjoyed it, and I thought it was cute. And I liked the kids. They were cute.
Is there any surreptitious political agenda that they're trying to sneak into the film? Are the ghosts...
No, and that is...
The ghosts aren't metaphors for, like, Black Lives Matter activists or something.
No, not that I saw. That's one of the things I liked about it all. So there's no politics in it. And I like when Hollywood realizes or occasionally returns to the days of old where we could just see a movie without being fed an agenda. This was one of those movies.
Julia, what's this film about?
So this is a documentary about the late chef Julia Child. And I know a lot about Julia Child because I've seen several movies about her already. And even though there was a lot in this movie I already knew, there was a lot I learned and I thought it was very interesting. It's a very well done documentary. And a couple interesting things that I learned about her was that I didn't like was that she was a big Democrat, raised money for Democrat politicians, and was very big on Planned Parenthood and abortions, and thought that abortions and sex education should be very available to very young kids. And unfortunately, I think she has gotten her wish. That said, I just thought it was a very amazing documentary. Oh, and also, she hated Republicans because her estranged father was one. She came from a very wealthy family, and he didn't like that she married somebody that was essentially a commoner who everybody thought was gay. I learned that she was 6'3". You know, she really was the pioneer of all these chefs we see on TV now. She started it all. She was the first one. And it just was super interesting, her life and how she built this career. She never cooked until she was in her 50s. I never knew that. It's a really, really cool film, very fun, and it's nice and short. It's under an hour and a half, which is the ideal time for me.
All right. Do you cook, Debbie?
I do when I have time, yes.
What's your specialty?
Nothing very fancy. It's probably the same specialty as anybody who can or cannot cook, which is I like scrambled eggs or a nice veggie omelet.
See, that's my specialty as well, scrambled eggs. I'm a master. King Richard, what's the story with this film? What's King Richard about? I'm imagining it's about King Richard.
It is about, not King Richard, it's about Richard Williams, the father of Venus and Serena Williams, the tennis champions. I did not care for this film, and I'll tell you why. Because I think it's really a fictional account of who this guy is, who he was, and also of the state of blacks in tennis. Now, I grew up playing competitive juniors tennis, and I am 10 years older, at least, than Serena Williams. And to watch this movie, you would think that no black people ever played pro or competitive juniors tennis. And that's just fiction. When I was playing tennis, there were already a lot of black kids playing tennis. There was a very, very heavy affirmative action and minority outreach part of tennis. They had a lot of tournaments in very bad neighborhoods of Detroit that I used to go to that they did just to promote tennis for black children. They had lots of scholarships. So this movie makes you think that there were never any major tennis, black tennis players or junior players. And I think it does a disservice to the people who really paved the way, who are not Venus and Serena. I think back to Althea Gibson, who was the first black woman to win Wimbledon, who was an American from the South, and her doubles partner, they were the world top players. And her doubles partner was this woman named Angela Buxton, who was a Jewish British woman. And both of them could not play at a lot of clubs in the United States because it was for whites only, Gentiles only. That would have been a very interesting movie. Richard Williams is a racist. They did not show that in this movie. When Venus and Serena were coming up in the pros, they did not get the contracts because they were not attractive. They were not nice. They were braggers. They were not modest. This movie makes it look like he was big on modesty. They constantly brag about themselves to this day. They say they're the greatest tennis players, male or female. And Serena Williams could not beat the 1,000th best men's player when she was number one, which she is no longer. The other thing was, so he would constantly attack Anna Kournikova, Richard Williams, because she was beautiful. She was in the top 10 at the time, and she was getting all the contracts because of the way she looked, because at that time, tennis was about looks and showbiz. It really wasn't, on the women's side, about skill. That has changed a lot. But he was saying, oh, they just like her because she's white and everyone's racist against my daughters. This movie makes it look like he wasn't like that. It also makes it look like a lot of famous white people in the tennis establishment were racist against blacks and didn't want them to become pro players and didn't believe in them. And again, like I said, when I was playing juniors, that was already not the case.
Debbie, this is not racist at all, but we are out of time, so we're going to have to end it there. Let's talk again soon, all right?
All right.
Have a great weekend and a good Thanksgiving.
You too. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Thank you. Debbie Schlussel. You can check out her blog at DebbieDoesPolitics.com or DebbieSchlussel.com. We'll do 15 Seconds of Fame next. If you want to be heard for 15 seconds, we have two open lines, 800-848-WABC. That's 800-848-922.
Start your morning with Frank Morano on 77 WABC.
This is the other side of midnight as we roll on here. By the way, stay tuned from 5 to 6 a.m. to the WABC Early News, all the news that's fit to listen to from 5 to 6 a.m. with Juliet Huddy and me. But before we get out of here, it is time for you to be heard for 15 seconds. All you have to do is dial 800-848-9222. It's time for
Other Side of Midnight. This is 15 Seconds of Fame.
Ken is in Brooklyn. Hello, Ken. Ken is done. Rob in the Bronx, hello.
Yeah, why don't you try a name that tune type of show sometime? Naming oldies or all kind of records, just a suggestion, since you do the movie thing.
It's not a bad idea. Raji in New York, hello.
Oh, how soon we forget. In World War II, 29 million Russians perished. while fighting on our side to defeat the Axis powers. Otherwise, who knows? Today, we might be communicating in German on the...
Roller is in New Jersey. Hello.
Hey, Frank, I know you're a history buff. Today's the anniversary of the Gettysburg Address. Tomorrow, can we request you give it a good dramatization of it? Maybe on the air, it's only 85 words long.
Well, you know, I actually don't work on Saturdays. That's the only day I don't work, so I'm not going to do that. Joan in New York, hello.
Hi, I'm so confused. The contestant got the first question wrong.
Well, I think he thought I said continent, not consonant. Cheech is in Howard Beach, hello.
Listen tonight to the Frankie Russo, the love me or hate me guy from Brooklyn on the wacky side of midnight tonight from 1 a.m. to 5 a.m. 1-800-848-WABC. We are moving.
Neil on Staten Island, hello.
Johnny Katz turned to Margo tonight and said, we hired the right man. William King, even Alan Dershowitz couldn't have got that answer.
Fred in Yonkers. Oh, sorry. Fred, go ahead.
Hey, Frank, I got an eclipse update over here. I got Orion over there. I got Cassiopeia over there. And the beautiful moon right in the middle. Ha-cha-cha-cha.
Finally, Rosemary in Westchester. Hi.
Hard to follow that. Always love your segments on films and actors. That was very good. She's very good. Have her back soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Rosemary. All right. That about slams the lid on things for today.